Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Tom Hartman Show, 9 to midnight, Monday through Friday, with the exception of Thursday, when we start Tom Hartman Show at 11 in the evening and run it through 2 in the morning. Thank you so much for listening to KRXA 540. And on the internet at KRXA540.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Have we ever disliked an outgoing president this much?
George W. Bush's final approval rating is just 22%, and that's the lowest final rating for an outgoing president since Gallup began asking about presidential approval more than 70 years ago.
CBS News Deputy Director of Surveys, Sarah Dutton.
Looking back on his presidency, 50% of Americans say that George W. Bush has been a poor president. Only 17% say that he's been very good or good, and 33% say he's been average.
The CBS News New York Times poll finds 73% disapprove George Bush's handling of the presidency. Search goes on for the engines of that U.S. Airways jet plane that splashed down in the Hudson River. Kitty Higgins, National Transportation Safety Board.
We've got the New York Police Department working with the Corps of Engineers and using side scan sonar, and they're out there now trying to locate the engines.
NTSB Safety Board officials expect to be able to pull the waterlogged plane out of the frigid river tomorrow morning. The accolades mounting for the pilot who pulled off the miracle on the Hudson.
I'm Peter King. No words yet directly for the pilot of that U.S. Airways jet, but his wife says she couldn't have been more shocked during their conversation after the emergency landing.
I was stunned when he called and said, there's been an incident.
Lori Sullenberger says that's because
my husband has said over the years that it's highly unlikely for any pilot to ever have an incident in his career, let alone something like this.
Sullenberger calls him a pilot's pilot who loves the art of the airplane and definitely was the right guy to make that landing.
They are used to the temperature hitting 20 below in Fort Kent, Maine. How about today's temperature of 40 below?
We've got the New York Police Department working with the Corps of Engineers.
40 below is cold, goes 20 below, so you tend to just bundle up a little bit warmer and start your vehicle a little bit earlier.
Justin Dubois lives in the town along the Canadian border, says that 40 below doesn't include the wind chill factor. It's also pretty darn cold in the Midwest, lowest temperatures in years today in many places. On a day when rockets rain on southern Israel and the bombs fall on Gaza, a memorandum of understanding is reached in Washington. Israeli Foreign Minister Zippy Livni.
We need your support, thank you for what we're doing. We highly appreciate it, and it gives us the strength to do the right thing.
The right thing being this agreement that calls for expanded intelligence cooperation between the U.S. and Israel to prevent Hamas from rearming should Israel agree to a truce. After putting her signature to that memo, outgoing Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice saying goodbye to all those working for her at the State Department.
Thank you very, very much for the honor of having been your Secretary of State. I wish you Godspeed. I wish you God's blessings. You will always be in my thoughts, my prayers, and my heart.
Stocks finish higher today. The Dow up 68, NASDAQ up 17. This is CBS News.
Are you a technology professional looking for a new job? Stop wasting time on general job sites, sifting through listings that are not relevant to you. Go to Dice.com. For over 17 years, Dice, the number one technology job board, has focused exclusively on tech jobs. Go to Dice.com to find tens of thousands of jobs all across the country. Software engineers, system administrators, web developers, and more. Visit Dice.com today. Dice.com.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles, and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
Mr. Litzinger goes to Washington.
As I was driving into work, I saw them setting up the portable toilets on the National Mall. Those of you attending the inauguration will be relieved, so to speak. There will be 5,000 of them ready for you on Tuesday. 10,000 buses are expected to bring people into D.C. If you put all of them end-to-end, which could happen in a traffic jam, they'd stretch 85 miles. Now, how many people will be here for the big event? Well, at least 1 million, maybe as many as 4 million. No one's really sure yet. And it's all for one person, the next president, Barack Obama. Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
It's a happy birthday for Muntadhar al-Zaidi. He's the Iraqi journalist in jail since throwing his shoes at President Bush, getting a visit from his brother today and a birthday party from his guards, turning 30. Al-Zaidi has been in custody since the December 14th outburst at a joint news conference with President Bush and Prime Minister al-Maliki. Thousands demonstrating for his release and hailing his gesture. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Hi, we're back with Worryline. Who are we talking with?
It's Cameron.
Cameron, what's worrying you today?
I'm freaking out.
Really? You don't sound like you're freaking out.
I know. That's what's freaking me out.
Okay, try and calm down.
I am calm.
So what's making you so calm? It's your mother, isn't it?
No, Mom's cool. It's my Volkswagen.
Oh.
It came with carefree maintenance.
And this has made you feel different, hasn't it?
Totally. Mm-hmm. I used to worry about my car all the time, but now I don't.
Mm.
What is happening to me?
I think you may be having an anti-anxiety attack.
A what?
Yes, it's an overwhelming sensation that everything is totally under control.
Okay, what do I do?
Nothing. There's no problem.
Cool. I guess I don't need you.
What? Hello?
Stop into your local Volkswagen dealer and ask about the Carefree Maintenance Program. No charge scheduled maintenance for 3 years or 36,000 miles, whichever comes first, on all 2009 Volkswagen models. Peace of mind. It's what the people want.
The Carefree Maintenance Program covers the vehicle's scheduled maintenance during the terms of the new vehicle warranty at no additional charge. Some limitations apply. See dealer for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show coming from San Francisco. Our program is heard up and down the left coast from Big Sur all the way north of the Canadian border. And now we're live in Boston on AM 15. And a tip of the hat to our Bay Area listeners late night and on Sundays at noon on Green 960 in San Francisco. Wherever you are, however you listen, I'm glad you found the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, do your marketing. Go to my website at peterbcollins.com. Share a podcast of a recent program with a friend. Our broadcast today and our special progressive coverage of Tuesday's historic inauguration of President Barack Obama is sponsored by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers on the web at IBEW.org. IBEW is ready for our green energy future. Standing by, we've been promised an interview with the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, John Conyers, Democrat from Michigan. He is scheduled to join us any minute now. We're going to follow up that with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com, who has been calling for full investigation and accountability of any wrongdoing by Bush administration officials. And I think that's a very important issue. Also this hour, Ari Melber, who writes for The Nation and TheNation.com, notes that over at Change.gov, the Obama transition site, the top issue was one posed by progressive Bob Furtick of Democrats.com about the need to investigate the wrongdoings, and in particular, Furtick suggested appointing Patrick Fitzgerald as a special prosecutor. And I would just improve on that in one respect. I think David Iglesias, the Republican U.S. attorney who was fired in New Mexico after the intrusion of Senator Domenici and Congresswoman Wilson, and a stalwart constitutionalist who refused to press phony charges as requested by his upper management at the Department of Justice. I think David Iglesias would be a great candidate for that. So that's what we're doing this hour. If you have a question or comment about holding the Bush administration accountable, you're welcome to join us at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Chairman Conyers appears to be operating on congressional time, which means we're not sure exactly when we'll hear from him. So let's go to Robert Perry right now. He's the investigative journalist, the author of Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush, and he publishes at his news website, the nonprofit ConsortiumNews.com. Bob, welcome to our program today.
Thanks, Peter.
Always good to talk with you. And first up, what's the weather forecast for Washington on Inauguration Day?
Well, today it's bitter, bitter cold. I hear it's going to be a little bit better on January 20th, but the indications are that it's not going to be the most pleasant experience for people outside.
Mm-hmm. Underalls, overalls, a hot water bottle.
Whatever you can do.
Some hot coals in your pocket, whatever it takes. Well, we hope that Chairman Conyers will be able to join us, and if so, I'll ask you to listen while we talk with him, and then we'll come back to you if there's time. But I am impressed because in the first week of the 111th Congress, he dropped six important pieces of legislation and a 487-page report, which is called Reigning in the Imperial Presidency of George W. Bush. And this is an exhaustive catalog of the allegations of wrongdoing. And, Bob Perry, we have heard repeatedly in the last few weeks from the top two dogs, Bush and Cheney themselves, admissions that, to me, really indicate their culpability for impeachment. It's too late for that now. But for really looking into the secrecy, the stretches of executive authority, and the downright illegal actions when it comes to torture, when it comes to the illegal wiretapping of American citizens. And I believe that with this 487-page report from Conyers and his staff, that there's ample information. And in many respects, we see the Democrats continue to dither over this. And Eric Holder, who is the nominee of Barack Obama for Attorney General, on the one hand said, yes, torture. First he said waterboarding is torture. Torture is illegal. Said the president can't order illegal actions that contravene the FISA law. But then he turned around and said, well, these were tough decisions, and we wouldn't want to persecute people who were just following orders. What do you make of this, and where do you think we're headed in terms of true accountability?
Well, I think what's remarkable is that President Bush and Vice President Cheney have not only essentially admitted that they committed felonies, but they acted in a way that was totally unapologetic. There was not even an expression of remorse. They defended what they did, and I think if justice has any place in a society, it not only insists on having laws enforced and accountability for breaking laws, but it also wants to make sure that the people who did it show some kind of make some kind of approach to their crimes, which suggests that they've learned lessons and that they and others around them might not do it again. And we certainly have seen the way this has played out previously. I've written extensively about the situation in 92-93 when a very comparable situation occurred with the Bush leaving office, with a recession underway, and in this case Bill Clinton coming into power. And the Democrats decided they would join in sweeping under the rug a number of crimes and offenses committed by the Reagan-Bush administrations, Iran-Contra, Iraqgate, October Surprise, Contra drug trafficking, you name it. There were some very serious crimes that had been committed. And instead of bringing justice, there was this idea, well, for bipartisanship, for the good of the country, maybe to avoid recriminations, we will just pretend it didn't happen. And the consequences of that were severe. As Paul Krugman wrote this morning in the New York Times, when the Bush 2 crowd came into power, they just picked up where they'd left off on Iran-Contra and other crimes. They continued, the same people in some cases, like Elliot Abrams showed up again after being pardoned by the first Bush. He went to work for the second Bush.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just a case of of history or of the past. This is really about what this country is about currently and what the future may hold. So these ideas that this is some kind of a crazy adventure to try to hold people accountable for committing serious crimes of state, I think that approach is a dangerous one.
Yeah. We're going to take our break now because we think we're going to get Congressman Conyers in just a few minutes, so stand by for that. Robert Perry with us. Read his work at consortiumnews.com. And stand by. We hope to talk with Chairman Conyers here shortly on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there. And who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambly, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family-owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas, too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
From the heavens, it was easy to tell. It was love from above that could save me from hell. She had fire in her soul. It was easy to see how the devil himself could be pulled out of me. There were drums in the air as she started to dance.
As we mentioned, Chairman John Conyers of the House Judiciary Committee. We're hoping he'll join us here in just a couple of minutes. We just heard from a staff member, and should be any minute now if it all works out. We continue with Robert Perry, journalist from ConsortiumNews.com. And one of the practical issues, Bob, that I've been thinking about in terms of the kind of equivocating that we're hearing from Obama and Eric Holder about whether they're going to hold Bushies accountable is that we don't know the outcome of the pardon game, and that until Tuesday at noon, when Bush is officially out of office, we won't know the extent to which he will issue pardons to those who may be the subject of the kind of investigations that you and I have been calling for.
Well, that's true. I mean, Bush can do whatever he wants until he's out of office, and he could well issue either specific pardons for individuals or for some kind of blanket pardon for people who come under some kind of category. Certainly his father did much the same before leaving office in 1992. He issued a half dozen pardons to Iran-Contra defendants, which stopped the Iran-Contra investigation even at a point when one of its emerging targets was then President George H.W. Bush. So the son may follow at least this legacy of the father and decide that he might want to make sure that people who could point the finger in his direction are given pardons, but we don't know that.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, if it does, it'll take the heat off Eric Holder, who's been quizzed about his support of pardons for Puerto Rican rebels and for Mark Rich at the conclusion of the Clinton administration. You know, I think that's worth discussing. I don't think it will block his confirmation there. But as we look at this, Bob, the other troubling issue that arose on Thursday is this ruling from a panel of the FISA court. And this is bizarre in many respects. The ruling was actually arrived at last August. It was just revealed. It's one of the only a handful, I think less than three, FISA court decisions that has actually been published. And it's a narrow ruling related to intercept of international communications that happened to come through the United States. That's one of the issues that was raised in the arguments to reform FISA. And it takes the position that, you know, if it inadvertently, you know, taps your phone or intercepts my email, that that's not a gross violation of the Fourth Amendment. But as we learn, Jonathan Turley was talking on television on Thursday night, and this was not an adversarial proceeding. There were not briefs presented by those of us on the civil liberty side of the Fourth Amendment question. And so for this court to rule in that vacuum is very disturbing to me, and it's further disturbing that the last stop for this will be the Roberts Alito Thomas Scalia Supreme Court.
Right. Well, what's very important is who the judges are. Sometimes we forget that judges are, in many cases, political hacks who get put on the bench and they get a robe on, and we suddenly think they came from delivered from heaven somewhere. It isn't true. The in many cases, and I've covered both state and federal judiciaries, often you get the guys who were delivering the goods when it came to political deal making, wanting to be a judge, and so they get the judgeship. And this, in the case of what we've seen over the past 28 years since Ronald Reagan came into power, was a concerted effort by the Republicans and the conservatives to seize control of the key courts, particularly the appeals court in Washington, because that's the one that actually handles many of these matters. And people from those courts are often put on special courts like the FISA court, or they were put on the panel that picks special prosecutors back in the 90s. So if you have the judges who will rule your way, That was a key element of how the Republicans were hoping to have what they call their permanent majority, that they would have the courts fix things when they had to. And we've seen that over the years. So, and certainly when we get to the Supreme Court, you have four hardline right-wing ideologues who will hand the Republicans almost whatever ruling that they want. Then you have Anthony Kennedy, who kind of sits in the middle a little bit and goes back and forth. So, but one has to understand that judges are people and they have ideologies. And if they get onto the court, then they can be as political as anybody else.
And, Bob, here's a quote from the chief judge who wrote in the opinion. Bruce Selya is his name. Our decision recognizes that where the government has instituted several layers of serviceable safeguards to protect individuals against unwarranted harms and to minimize incidental intrusions, its efforts to protect national security should not be frustrated by the courts. Now, we don't know what those serviceable safeguards are, these layers of protection. We've just got to take this on faith, don't we?
Well, I think somewhat he's referring to what we saw in the so-called Protect America Act in its different forms. That's what I presume he's talking about. And there were some safeguards put in as part of the so-called Democratic Compromise that was passed in last year, even with the support of Barack Obama, ultimately.
Yeah.
But that, I think, may be what he's referring to, because there was congressional action that set some rather minor levels of safety.
So as we sum this up, it really is a teetering moment where the outlines of criminal cases are very clear. The evidence is, in some respects, out in the open, and there's much more probably submerged. The White House emails may have been rescued at the last minute by the lawsuits of crew and the activism of a judge on the bench in Washington. But it does appear that Barack Obama wants to, as Bob Seger said, and as Obama said so many times during the campaign, simply turn the page. And I think that's unconstitutional, unwise, and un-American. And I think that as we, many of us, celebrate the inauguration of Barack Obama, we also must remind our elected leaders, including him, that we have Fourth Amendment rights, and this effort to expand police powers and surveillance powers in this country has got to stop.
And one of the concerns I think we have to have about Obama at this point is whether or not he wants to be part of this Washington establishment. Whether he really sees this as a moment of change or continuity. There was a piece today by Charlie Krauthammer, the neoconservative columnist of the Washington Post, about how sort of bragging that Obama is now accepting the wisdom of George W. Bush and is engaged in this continuity. Of course, Krauthammer was one of the right-wing columnists who joined Obama at a little private dinner this week. Whether Obama really wants to be transformational or whether he simply wants to be part of the club is going to be one of the questions I think we'll have answered maybe in the first few weeks and months of this presidency.
Obama gave an interview in Ohio today, and I've just seen some quotes lifted from it. I haven't read the whole thing, but in one place he's quoted as saying, well, he thinks George Bush is a pretty good guy.
I hate to see that kind of pandering. I'm not sure what else it could be. I wrote a piece a year or so ago when Obama made some similar comments about Ronald Reagan, not taking into account really that Ronald Reagan's true history. It was kind of this effort to pander to conservatives and Republicans. Those aren't good signs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Bob, I want to thank you for joining us today. We'll see if Congressman Conyers surfaces on the program. I certainly hope so, but I want to direct people to the report called Reigning in the Imperial Presidency. Just Google Conyers and Imperial, and it'll probably come right up. Or you can go to the Conyers website, which you can find at house.gov. So thank you, Bob, and we'll talk to you again on Inauguration Day.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay, very good. That's Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. Visit their website. A lot of good information there. That's ConsortiumNews.com. It's a nonprofit journalism site. So if you're in a position to help them support that work, feel free to do so. That's ConsortiumNews.com. We'll take a break. We're still standing by to talk with John Conyers. Ari Melber from The Nation will join us next, and he'll tell us that on the transition site, change.gov, the overwhelming
top issue for the public, accountability for the Bush administration. That's coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. The outgoing administration has prepared contingency plans this time should the new president be challenged early on with any number of possible terrorist attacks. This is something new.
As far as I know, this is the first time that policy contingency papers have been created.
White House spokesman Gordon Jandro.
So what we have done is created a document that goes over several scenarios of what could happen if they're faced with some immediate crises. They can use them, they could discard them, but we thought it would be useful that they could see what we have come up with.
More after this.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with a very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney. Finalized the contract in London and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code 303 to get a free trial and a free webcam, too. Remember that code, 303, to qualify for the free webcam. WebEx, now part of Cisco, and used by more than 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try. Free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code 303. WEBEX.com. Free webcams available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
During the campaign, Senator Joe Biden predicted the new president would be severely tested right away. President Bush wanted to give Mr. Obama the benefit of some pre-planning.
Well, our nation is safer than it was 7 years ago. The gravest threat to our people remains another terrorist attack. Our enemies are patient and determined to strike again.
How and where is the question? This Sunday morning on our CBS News television program, Rita Braver will be looking at some of the crisis scenarios. One area of vulnerability is that everything is computer systems now, and Rita spoke with Joel Brenner, the government's top computer security official.
Why is it so important for the administration to be up to speed on this from day one?
Because we're electronically undressed, and everything we do is done on an electronic network. All of the information that we create is created electronically.
White House spokesman Gordon Jandro says,
this is an effort to provide the incoming team as much information as we possibly can, just because the world in 2009 is so different from when we found it in 2001. It is moving at lightning speed, and the incoming team is going to have a lot of incoming as soon as they get to the White House on January the 20th.
More on this when I see you on the television this Sunday morning on CBS. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Come listen to the new Jennifer Cruz Show, Saturdays at noon, where we will get into it, I-N-T-U-I-T. We'll talk about intuition, emotions, and passions, all the invisible aspects of each and every one of us that nobody talks about. The Jennifer Cruz Show is made possible by Weiland Galleries in Carmel and Water Me Well Inner Healing Apparel. Visit watermewell.com. See you Saturdays at noon on the new Jennifer Cruz Show. Remember, Saturdays at noon, only on AM 540. Get into it.
Installing new transmitter. 50,000 cool ones. New computer with high-end sound card. $4,000. Replacing satellite dish blown off roof in storm. $2,500. Operating the finest talk radio station west of the Gavilan Mountains. Priceless. KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
The birds and the airplane did fly.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Shh, 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 shh.
change is coming to America. Is it enough for you? Well, I'm certainly hungry for it. We're still standing by to hear from Chairman John Conyers of the House Judiciary Committee.
Still don't know what I was waiting for. And my time was running wild in dead streets. And every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me. But I've never caught a glimpse.
And we're getting word from a Conyers staffer that he's at the auto show in Detroit. So it may be a little later on in the program, in case you don't catch it here right now. Just check back and listen to the podcast at peterbcollins.com. And we'll post on the web if Chairman Conyers does join us today, so you'll be able to find that out easily. Again, my website, www.peterbcollins.com. Ari Melber writes for The Nation and TheNation.com. He helped us all year long covering the presidential campaign. Spent quite a bit of time on the road with Barack Obama. Ari, welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
Good to talk with you. And in the preceding segment, as we were waiting for Chairman Conyers, we were talking with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. And we're focused right now on these issues of investigation of wrongdoing by the Bush administration. I'm fueled up by Paul Krugman's Friday column in the New York Times, where he talks about forgive and forget, and makes the point that we really can't afford to do that. And you put up a post this week at TheNation.com about the action over at the Obama transition site, change.gov. Bob Furtick, who's also a contributor to this program, a progressive Democrat who runs the website Democrats.com, he put up a post at change.gov that turned out to be the most supported one, the most popular one among people who came to the site. And Furtick called for investigations of wrongdoing by Bush officials, and he suggested that Patrick Fitzgerald be appointed to conduct those investigations and prosecutions. I have a minor quibble with Furtick on that, because I'm not completely satisfied with the job Fitzgerald did on the Karl Rove, Valerie Plame outing case. And I also feel he's got his hands full with the guy with the big hair in Chicago right now, Rod Blagojevich. So I'm suggesting David Iglesias, the fired U.S. attorney from New Mexico, because I think he's a straight shooter, he's a Republican, he's a military judge advocate general, and I don't think anybody would ever accuse him of a partisan witch hunt.
I think both of them could be very good choices, and I think there's many Democrats and other people with independent reputations that would make excellent choices. I do think it's crucial and important that Paul Krugman has weighed in on this issue. Many of the leading center-left and progressive voices in the traditional media have not been strong on this issue, both in the print pages and in much of the broadcast media, with some exceptions, Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann being the most noteworthy in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So having Paul Krugman weigh in and having other people continue to make these arguments is important. We have an administration now that has publicly admitted to breaking the law and ordering torture. We have, as I've told you before and written before, people sitting in jail right now for the crimes at Abu Ghraib. And the question, of course, is whether these will be fully investigated and go up the chain of command, or whether we're going to let this administration get away with these crimes and blame other people for them, which is not only wrong in the here and now, but sets a terrible precedent for the future.
Mm-hmm. And in the post that you put up at TheNation.com, and I found it, there's a link to it on the homepage still, Robert Gibbs, who is the chief spokesman for the Obama transition and will be a press official in the White House, he kind of blew it on this. He tried to finesse the number one issue that was brought to the website they created, which is at least attempting to convey the sense that average citizens can influence the policy direction of the Obama administration.
That's right. As you know, I've given the Obama aides and staff a lot of credit for the kind of campaign they ran and a lot of the transparency initiatives. They've done a great job in other areas. But they had a huge failure here. They were inaccurate and misleading in trying to bury the question and saying it was previously answered. That doesn't pass the last test. And, of course, once Barack Obama himself was forced to answer it when the question was raised by George Stephanopoulos in a Sunday TV interview quoting Bob Furyk at Change.gov, that was big news, and it made the front page of the New York Times the next day. So no one out there, the independent observers in the news media, thought this was an answered or dead issue. They thought it was front page news. So that was number one, how they buried it. And then, as you say, Robert Gibbs did not answer it. And that is a big problem. If you're going to welcome this citizen input, you have to, I believe, welcome it, whether you like it or not and agree with it or not. No one was telling Obama's aides what to do. They were simply participating and saying, okay, here's our question, and they wouldn't even deign to answer the most popular question. It was, as I wrote, I believe, Change.gov's first big failure.
And wasn't one of the other top 10 questions about legalizing marijuana, and didn't they kind of just sidestep that by saying, oh, no?
Yeah, and there I would say, you know, they answered that the first round. This was the second round. And in the first round, they did give an answer. It was short, but they at least addressed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be clear, if for whatever reason they felt this was too early to answer it, and they put up an answer saying, we will answer this later, we will answer this in February, or whatever their pitch might be, that would at least be direct. That would at least be clear. But what instead they did was pretend that it had been answered. They said, oh, the special prosecutor question is a previously answered item, and then Robert Gibbs rebuffed it. And that, I think, was a big error, and it backfired quickly. That's the silver lining here. We have open platforms that can help scrutinize that kind of spin or frankly, that kind of misleading answer or non-answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that's a real practical issue that just occurred to me yesterday when we were commenting on Eric Holder's testimony, and on the one hand, he took strong positions. Yes, waterboarding is torture, and torture is illegal, and yes, the president cannot authorize wiretapping that violates the FISA law. But he also turned around and kind of reassured Republican senators that, oh, I'm not going to go after these people, and I don't want to second-guess judgments they made in a very difficult time. And while I listened to the nuance of that, it frustrated me on one level, but I also recognized, Ari, that we've got a few more days of pardon season. And maybe the practical reason the Obama team is downplaying this is just the wait and see as to whether there will be anybody to prosecute. Because if, as many of us expect, Bush issues broad or blanket pardons, you know, the most we could then expect would be the kind of truth commission that Chairman Conyers is proposing.
Right. I think a lot of people are worried about that kind of abuse. Of course, if it was a blanket pardon that attempted to immunize everyone who'd served in the administration, that would obviously invite a lot of novel legal questions and, I think, legal challenges. And if it's not a blanket pardon, then there will be some people who can be on the hook. So I can understand them moving at, you know, a deliberate pace, as the president-elect has said. But ultimately, we don't get to flip on and off legal accountability under our Constitution. And I've heard the arguments, and many progressive readers have written into me or posted on some of my pieces saying, well, that sounds good, but he, Obama, needs to focus on spending his political capital on other priorities. Well, that's not how the law works. That's not how our Constitution works. And we didn't have all these people work hard all this campaign and put in change to then be told that we have to make exceptions for torturers and exceptions for people who've really, you know, really hurt our good name and standing in the world. That's not the change that I think people worked for. So
and Ari, I think we need to be clear here that other than political crossfire, there's no bandwidth required of the president or his top staff to permit the Justice Department or a special prosecutor to fully investigate and then pursue criminal prosecutions as indicated. You know, the president does not have to spend any particular amount of time or attention on that.
Exactly. I mean, with the irony, of course, again, this is one of these situations where the discourse and the description in Washington is completely inside out. It is not that Obama or anyone has to spend political capital or make a political assessment to proceed on these issues, but rather the enforcement of the law is the default position. We shouldn't depart from it. Mm-hmm. And it's only because we've had an administration that is lawless and that has been interested in subverting the Constitution and torturing people and asserting unilateral executive claims that we've even gotten in the mindset of discussing it this way. But really, as many law professors have pointed out, you enforce the law, you conduct investigations, and the chips fall where they may. We saw that in Illinois at a state level where, you know, if it leads all the way up to the governor and he's guilty, then so be it. That's reality. And if this goes all the way up into the White House, so be it.
Well, and Ari, the other element that comes in here is my doubts, my serious doubts, about Obama's ability to pull off the postpartisan tone that he is proposing. Because I don't think the Republicans will play ball. And if Obama turns one cheek, they'll make sure he turns the other cheek, and then they'll go for the lower cheeks. And I just think that this is going to be a short-lived experiment, and that in short order, Obama will have to recognize that you can't mollify the real hard-right radical Republicans, that they will take any pot shot at him that they can. And we're already seeing Boehner. Raise questions about bailouts and restarting the economy here in ways that are purely partisan. They're not based on, strong policy or philosophical concerns. In my view, it's pure partisanship. And every time John Boehner says we're not the party of no, it underscores, well, that's what he's planning to do. It is the party of no.
Yeah, and look, we've been in a bipartisan era. We had a bipartisan agreement on going to war in Iraq. We had a bipartisan agreement on the initial tax cuts. The political parties in Washington have agreed on a great many issues of consequence and been wrong. And when they're wrong and they're together, it doesn't help the country. So I'm just not someone who's ever been that interested in consensus for its own sake. We want a vigorous, healthy debate that's embedded in our democracy, and to the extent that Barack Obama can get Republicans to go along with the changes he's outlined in foreign policy and domestic spending to create jobs, great. That's what he ran on, and they're welcome to join. But I don't think he should get into the game of watering things down to bring over the people who, by and large, oppose him, his agenda, and his future reelection. That is politics. So I do think Barack Obama is often much more hard-headed in making choices and getting things done than his rhetoric, which is the mark of a successful politician. And we may see that some of this postpartisanship gets put aside when it's time to get things done.
We're going to take a break and return. Ari Melber is with us. Read his work at thenation.com. We'll go to the phones in the next segment. You can dial in right now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KIXA. Ha!
If you transfer your IRAs, 401ks, or any retirement accounts today, we will add 10% to your full account value. $100,000 becomes $110,000, $400,000 becomes $440,000, and $700,000 becomes $770,000. My name is Stephen DeJohn, president of the DeJohn Advisory Team. I was on the cover of Senior Market Advisor magazine because I protect my clients' money, and I can guarantee an income for life. We don't recommend stocks, mutual funds, or variable annuities. These are risky securities. With securities, you have unlimited upside, but you also have unlimited downside. Our clients do not lose money in negative markets. Do you have a multi-generational IRA? Why not? It's been your right since 2001. Don't let Uncle Sam be your biggest beneficiary because your broker or banker is sleeping at the wheel. Call us right now at 866-515-6669 to receive your free video and brochure. We will then set up your free IRA and retirement checkup at one of our nationwide locations. Call 866-515-6669. It's a new year and it's time for change. Call 866-515-6669.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi, Whatever your choice, we at La Sala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. La Sala's By Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. La Sala's By Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're coast to coast, now live in Boston on AM 1510 WWZN. We continue with Ari Melber from The Nation and TheNation.com. He is their Netroot specialist over at The Nation. He's done a lot of interesting reporting on the role of the web in politics these days. And we're joined by Sandra in Sacramento. Hello, Sandra. Good to hear from you again.
Hey, Peter. Ari, nice to speak with you guys. Listen, I'm a bit concerned with this blending of politics and law. As far as I'm concerned, the law is the law. And the idea that the Obama administration is sort of coming up with ways not to deal with the law makes me feel really uncomfortable, because I conduct my life in the idea that if I break the law, well, there's a consequence. And so aren't we obligated to maintain this if we're going to be a country of laws?
Well, you raise a good point, and Barack Obama has spoken to the issue in a broad way, saying that no one is above the law. And he and the Attorney General designate, Eric Holder, have been explicit on certain key issues, like waterboarding is torture, torture is wrong, and that the president doesn't have the kind of expansive powers claimed by the Bush and Cheney administration. But we haven't seen a repudiation of rendition. We haven't seen a repudiation of signing statements and other power grabs that are emblematic of Bush and Cheney. Ari?
And I also
hold on a sec. Let's get a comment from Ari. Go ahead.
Sure. I agree. I completely agree with the premise of the question, and it is a fundamental issue over whether we are all governed by the same laws. But in some ways that our founders discussed this, it is more problematic for the people who do maintain power and wield it in our name, and who have fewer checks on them because of the lives they lead and the trust we put in them. So if we're not enforcing the laws that govern what our elected officials and their staffs do, then we're not a nation of laws, and obviously we have less incentives for those people to do what they're told because there isn't a check remaining on them.
Sandra, go ahead.
Yeah, and I also just want to say that the way the Beltway is sort of trying to frame this as if you're concerned about the law in this matter, somehow you're liberal. And then once again, liberalism has been tossed into this conversation, and it's pointless. Anyway, thanks so much.
Well, that's a very good point, Sandra. I'm glad you raised that, and I appreciate your call today, because that is, of course, the opening frame for partisan battles over these issues, Ari. And it's a way that the Republicans will try to protect their own by saying, oh, it's just the liberal media and those dangerous lefties at The Nation and Air America, you know, they will try to marginalize this call for justice.
Absolutely, and you see it again in the media discussion of these issues. There, I think, is for some reporters and writers a feeling of guilt or involvement, because for so many years, these issues, torture, for example, was wrongly covered as some sort of open policy question. When, as Eric Holder has said, and every expected. The legal expert has said we have these boundaries. They're in the Geneva Conventions. They're in the War Crimes Act. They're codified in law. And so I think it is hard for people in the media who maybe have gotten pulled down the wrong line, falsely suggesting that these are open policy questions, to then have to go back and say, no, actually, these were legal lines that were crossed, and I guess we were wrong about all this. Now, I'm speaking a little generally, and it doesn't apply to everyone, of course, but there is that problem for people who may be complicit in having gone along with the wrong story.
And, Ari, the other meme that is coming from a similar zone and has a kind of similar frame to it is this advice that Obama shouldn't overreach. And I really get infuriated by this, and I appreciate the op-ed that Tom Frank published this week in the Wall Street Journal. He's the guy who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas and stole my name for the Bushies, called Wrecking Crew, for his most recent book. But Tom Frank said that Obama shouldn't shrink, that he shouldn't listen to this advice coming from conservatives, that he should not or could or can't overreach and survive. And this is so precious because Bush, who in my view stole both of his elections and therefore was entitled to zero mandate, always claimed a mandate as if he'd, you know, won 90% of the vote in this country and enjoyed that standing in the polls throughout his 8 years. And so for this advice to be coming from the conservative corporate media pundits that Obama needs to be cautious and centrist, well, it really irks me.
Well, you know, yeah, it's the usual thing. Bipartisanship is most popular in Washington whenever Democrats are back in charge. And I think, obviously, there is a bit of a tilt. And, of course, there's the ridiculousness of people in the press giving public advice to the president about strategy anyway. I mean, if you're objective, right, you have no business publicly strategizing for the president. And if you're on a side, then you should say which side you're on. And if you're conservative, why would you be giving altruistic advice? So a lot of this sort of evaporates as soon as you analyze it. And I'm not aware of many legal experts or progressives giving that advice. It's really only people who would seem to benefit from a defanged or less bold Obama administration.
Well, and I love hearing these people talk about how, you know, the worst thing he could do is impose regulations on the financial community.
Right.
I mean, that is so blatantly self-serving and inappropriate for the time that it kind of marks those who offer that advice as greedy mofos in my book.
Well, it's, you know, you mentioned the blog stuff. There's a name for that online. It's called a concern troll. A troll is someone who comes and doesn't want to participate in an honest way but just wants to start a fight or, you know, make a discussion thread uncomfortable. And the concern reference is that this is the kind of person who comes on and will falsely say, well, as a liberal, I think Obama should do X, and then it's something crazy. And this sort of concern trolling is out there in the mainstream media. You know, we need to talk about policies that work on their merits and not publicly strategize so much about what will or won't backfire for Obama. He's got to do what's right. We've got to debate it. And leave the politics aside, at least here, that the campaign's finally over.
Ari Melber, one final question. Earlier this week, Obama went to dinner at George Will's house with all of the conservative writers and pundits and apparently charmed them, and Krauthammer already wrote a pretty nice piece as a result. And George Will was bragging about how, you know, they drank their coffee from China at George Will's house, but the lefties got to meet with Obama and consumed their coffee from styrofoam cups. Do you know about his meeting with the non-conservatives? Because I haven't read much about that. Like, who was invited?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, I don't care so much about the cutlery, but it was not balanced out by similar opinionated voices on the left the way that he had people on the right. Rather, he had Maureen Dowd and Ron Brownstein and Frank Rich. Rachel Maddow was there and was probably the only bona fide progressive in my view. But, you know, my boss, Katrina Vandenhevel of the Nation was not there. No one from the American Prospect, the other major liberal magazine, was there. Amy Goodman, another real strong,
sure,
true progressive voice, was not there. While on the right side, you had, as you mentioned, Krauthammer, and you had people from the Weekly Standard. You had real bona fide conservative voices. I am perfectly fine with Obama talking to as many people across the spectrum as possible, including the far right, if he wants to engage. I mean, talk is good. He could talk to Iran and he could talk to Krauthammer. But I will say, yes, briefly, it was a very problematic that he reached so far out to the right and not as far out to the left.
All right.
And next time there should be more.
Ari Melber, thank you very much. We'll read you at thenation.com, and I'll talk to you on Inauguration Day.
You got it. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. IBEW is the proud sponsor of our progressive coverage of the historic Obama inauguration, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. 750,000 strong is poised to contribute to President Obama's plans for a green economy and our new energy future. Our members are the skilled workforce with the most experience in solar and wind turbine installation, and we have the training programs to supply the skilled labor for our green future. The IBEW is on the front lines, the power lines of the fight for clean energy, from small commercial jobs to massive alternative energy projects, from the Atlantic to the Pacific. The IBEW has a proven track record of professional, high-quality solar and wind installation. Visit our website at IBEW.org. And thanks to every IBEW member who helped bring a new day to Washington. IBEW, helping to transform America's energy.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A complication for air safety investigators.
Both engines are no longer attached to the plane.
The hero captain's wife speaks out.
He's a pilot's pilot, and he loves the art of the airplane.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The U.S. Airways jet that made a miracle landing in New York's Hudson River yesterday is still in the water, tied to a pier and mostly submerged, but two key components are missing. Kitty Higgins of the National Transportation Safety Board says divers made the discovery today.
You could see that the left engine was not attached as the plane was pulled into the into its current location. The divers were able to tell us that the right engine is also no longer there.
The search of the river is complicated by currents and cold temperatures, but CBS News correspondent Bob Orr says officials won't give up.
They need to look at the engines because investigators will want to see if there are imprints in the metal or forensic evidence that would support the idea that one or two birds went through each side of those two engines.
A collision with birds is believed to be what knocked the engines out shortly after takeoff from LaGuardia Airport. When the plane landed safely, this passenger had the happy realization that he could go on with business as usual.
I just reached into the back seat pocket, pulled my BlackBerries back out. I'm standing out on the plane saying, I'm not going in the water because that'll ruin my phones. It's the last thing I'm going to do. I kept them dry and was able to make all my calls.
Now this.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
Two drivers, two very different stories heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
The more we learn about pilot Sully Sullenberger, the more it becomes clear that he was exactly the right person to be at the controls of Flight 1549. A flyer since the age of 14, he was ranked best aviator in his class at the Air Force Academy. He was a fighter pilot, an expert at glider flying, and had studied how cockpit crews behave in a crisis. Sullenberger's wife, Lori, calls him a pilot's pilot and says the way he handled yesterday's emergency is just like the man she knows.
We are very grateful that everyone is off the airplane safely, and that was really what my husband asked to convey to everyone.
Sullenberger, who's sequestered while the investigation goes on, got a congratulatory phone call from President Bush today. The Senate just passed a resolution praising the crew and the emergency responders, and New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg will present an award.
I have a key to the city right here, and I'm going to hold on to it until we have the opportunity to present it to the incredibly brave pilot, co-pilot, and the crew of U.S. Airways Flight 1549.
2 months after the election, Barack Obama campaigned in Ohio today. He went to a plant near Cleveland that makes wind turbine parts for to campaign for passage of a big economic stimulus by Congress.
It's a plan that will create or save 3 to 4 million jobs in businesses large and small across a wide range of industries.
He said a lot of the money would be invested in renewable energy. Americans have high expectations of Mr. Obama. In a CBS News New York Times poll, 68% said he'll be a good or very good president. But Sarah Dutton of our survey unit says President Bush is leaving office a very unpopular leader.
George W. Bush's final approval rating is just 22%, and that's the lowest final rating for an outgoing president since Gallup began asking about presidential approval more than 70 years ago.
In the West Bank town of Hebron, Israeli troops fired tear gas at rock-throwing Palestinians protesting the continuing assault on Gaza. More than 1,100 Palestinians have been killed since Israel launched its offensive last month. Egypt continues its efforts to mediate a ceasefire, and Israel says its military operation is now in the final act. The price of oil bumped up a little bit today, more than a dollar to finish the week at $36.04 a barrel. Analysts say in the long run, gasoline prices could be trending downward once again. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Are you a technology professional looking for a new job? Stop wasting time on general job sites, sifting through listings that are not relevant to you. Go to Dice.com. For over 17 years, Dice, the number one technology job board, has focused exclusively on tech jobs. Go to Dice.com to find tens of thousands of jobs all across the country. Software engineers, system administrators, web developers, and more. Visit Dice.com today. Dice.com.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles, and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
The Treasury Department.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Today's program and our special progressive coverage of the historic inauguration of President Barack Obama, sponsored by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They're on the web at IBEW.org. IBEW, ready for our green energy future. And we've still got a Conyers watch underway here at the Peter B. Collins Show today. Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee may join us. Current indications it'll be next hour. But whenever he's available, we'll pause and talk to him. Later this hour, Ray McGovern, a former CIA officer, will join us. He says that Michael Hayden, the outbound CIA director, appears to be hiding something. We'll talk with Ray about that about 30 minutes from now. But first, Jeff Gerth returns to our program. 19 years at the New York Times, a couple of Pulitzers, and a Polk Award, and he is now at the new nonprofit investigative journalism site, ProPublica. Jeff, welcome back to our show today.
Thanks, Peter. Let me quickly correct you. I spent 30 years at the New York Times.
Well, my apology. It's a weak math on my part.
That's all right.
76 to 2000. I'm sorry. I thought it was 86, and I did the math wrong. Almost 30 years. And did you get a good buyout?
I did. While they were still reasonable and
And before they sold display ads on the front page of the paper. That just happened this week.
This is true.
Yeah, kind of disturbing. Hey, before we get down to your recent piece about Timothy Geithner and the bailout, there's a lot I want to ask you about. I wanted to have a little fun. We fired up the Wayback Machine, and we go back to June of 2008, and this is the back cover, full color ad on the New Yorker. And I want to see if you can name the company that paid for this ad. The copy reads, "One less thing to worry about, and it's a beauty. Deciding where to invest your retirement savings can be pretty stressful. Put your mind at ease with You're tapping into more than 85 years of wisdom and expertise that can help make your retirement savings last." And then in a different font and a different color, it reads, "Not worrying can reduce stress and add 15 years to your life." It goes on, "We've helped over 5 million people retire stronger. Getting started is simple. Ask your financial advisor or contact this company." Can you guess the name of this firm?
Could it be Citi or Smith Barney, one of their subsidiaries?
Nope. No, this is the firm that has received the most, to my
AIG.
Knowledge. There you go.
Yeah, when you said 85 years, I was thinking that's AIG.
Well, and of course, Jeopardy in a year or so will have a category, bailouts for 500, Bob.
Yeah, well, there'll be a lot of choices.
Now, if they were required to truthify that, shouldn't they run ads saying, well, we're taking 15 years off the life of many retirees because a lot of people are going to have to work longer to recover the losses that we've all sustained?
Well, you're talking with one of them.
Yeah, I understand. Well, let's do a balance sheet on Timothy Geithner. He has been appointed Treasury Secretary, a couple of bumps in the road there.
And he's been nominated or chosen to be nominated.
Correct, yes. Appointed, nominated, he has yet to be confirmed. And so on the asset side, he seems to have significant experience. He seems to have a demeanor that matches that of the incoming president. What else would you add to the positive side of the Tim Geithner balance sheet?
Well, I think his experience is, especially in the last couple years, in the area of dealing with crises and dealing with the financial markets. So, you know, his previous experience at the Treasury Department was in international financial matters, which are still important, but his experience at the New York Fed has sort of put him in the middle of the maelstrom, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's well liked by his colleagues. He's obviously bright. I think, you know, I've heard stories of his being one of the few people who would be willing to tell Larry Summers, the Treasury Secretary at the end of the Clinton administration, that he was wrong. And, so I think those are on the plus side of the balance sheet.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the negative side, we've recently learned about almost $50,000 in taxes that he failed to pay, and he's made the money up. And I consider that, having been audited five times myself, a very minor issue. And also there's some talk about a domestic worker whose immigration status expired shortly before this person left his employ. And likewise, I don't think that's a big deal. What I'm really concerned about, Jeff Girth, is that while Geithner represents continuity, and you can say that he knows the bailout process, he knows what's happened so far, he certainly knows the extent of our exposure and liabilities, I also consider him part of the problem. And this first phase of the bailout has been a total mess. Elizabeth Warren has been sharply critical. It appears they've handed out $350 billion and barely gotten receipts. We don't know where that money has gone. Bloomberg's efforts to get information by filing lawsuits under FOIA has been rebuffed. And so while they promise us that they're going to do things differently, isn't it fair to say that Tim Geithner is part of the mess that he apparently is going to be charged with fixing?
I think it's fair. I would actually expand what you described and talk about his role the last 5 years as a regulator and supervisor. And if you look at what bank regulators are supposed to do, they basically have two functions. One is to prevent crises, and the other is to resolve them.
And let me lift a quote, two paragraphs here from your article at ProPublica.com. The New York Fed Supervisory, .org, I'm sorry. The New York Fed Supervisory Unit reports directly to the bank president, Geithner. The unit's job is to ensure that firms manage risk and have enough capital to cushion against losses. Large companies tend to be held more to more stringent capital standards. Yet poor risk management and weak capital levels were central to Citigroup's undoing. One enforcement agreement in place before Geithner took office in 2003, an order requiring quarterly risk reports, was lifted during his watch. A ban on major acquisitions also was eliminated a year after it had been imposed in 2005. And you go on to report that Citigroup went on an acquisition binge, and this all occurred as Geithner was responsible for monitoring what they're doing.
This is correct, and I think this is... goes to the question of how did Citigroup, grow so aggressively and risky, in such a risky way under, the supervision of the New York Federal Reserve, which he was the president of, and had it been better supervised and reined in a little better, could it have, been prevented from becoming sort of the largest corporate bank welfare case in history.
And some people are pointing fingers at Robert Rubin, who has left Citigroup just recently. And he, of course, was part of the rah-rah, along with Summers, in helping deregulating the investment community during the Clinton era. And so I'm having a hard time sorting it out, Jeff, because on the one hand, yep, Rubin could have run some political interference. But after all, this all occurred during a Republican administration when a Clinton Democrat like Rubin would see his power at a low ebb.
Well, you have to first of all, let's step back for a second and go back to what was happening at the beginning of the Bush administration when the Enron problem broke out.
Mm-hmm.
And Rubin had gone from being Secretary of Treasury and was, in a position at Citigroup. And he called up, I believe it was the Secretary of Treasury, seeking help in connection with what was going on with Enron and Citigroup, which had a large exposure and ultimately wound up having to pay a couple $1 billion in settlements because of its dealings with Enron. But so in some respects, the connections between people on Wall Street and administrations is not necessarily one that's based on partisan affiliations. But let me also point out that the New York Federal Reserve, which is the organization that Tim Geithner presided over, is actually not part of the government. It is a nonprofit organization that's part of the Federal Reserve system, but is actually owned by member banks.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one of the directors of the New York Federal Reserve for a number of years was Sandy Weill, who was the former CEO of Citigroup.
Right.
So, in many ways, the New York Fed is not part of an administration, be it Democrat or Republican. It's essentially the Federal Reserve's eyes and ears on Wall Street and the financial markets.
We're going to take a break and return with Jeff Gerth. You can read his work at ProPublica.org, not .com, as I said earlier, ProPublica, P-U-B-L-I-C-A. And it's a very powerful piece that he's written. I recommend it to you. I want to offer a quick apology. Apparently, I offended Daniel in Santa Cruz last hour when I was talking about how there are these people giving free advice about how Obama shouldn't go too far in re-regulating the financial community in this country. And I referred to them as greedy mofos. Daniel, I'm sorry. I don't know if it was the greedy or the mofo that offended you, but you have my humble.
Excuse me.
We'll continue. You got a question or comment about Geithner, the appointed Secretary of Treasury in the incoming Obama administration? Dial me now, toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. This program produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Nick Tanum taking your calls today. KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Yeah. Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays from 3 to 5. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show. So please, if you tune in on Saturdays and hear basketball, you can hear me on Sundays from 3 to 5. The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Cornerstone Wellness Center on Cass Street in Monterey. Remember, if you tune in and hear basketball from 3 to 5 on Saturday, I'll be on Sunday, 3 to 5. The Sheila Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now in King City, we have a couple of incidents happening. There are wires down on northbound Indian Valley, just north of Hidden Creek. The wires are low-hanging across both lanes, so be very careful there. We also have a traffic collision on Indian Valley Road, just south of Hare Canyon Road. Taking a look at Santa Cruz, we have a traffic hazard on the northbound one at Soquel Drive. There's a deer running in the roadway, so look out for her. Also on Soquel Drive, on the northbound one, there is a pedestrian in the roadway right now. And on Opal Cliff Drive at 41st Avenue, we have a traffic collision with no injuries. Making our way to Hollister Gilroy, we have a traffic collision on the southbound 101 just north of northbound Highway 85. There is a vehicle in the center divider there. Well, that's your traffic on AM 540. Peter B. Collins will be right back.
Twenty-three minutes after the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Investigative reporter Jeff Girth, now publishing at ProPublica.org, and the article we're talking about, How Citigroup Unraveled Under Geithner's Watch, was co-published with Politico.com. And Jeff Girth, I have two questions that I'd like you to chew on. Number one, will we see criminal investigations and indictments? Because at some point, the insiders became aware of the depths of the problems. I mean, the Bear Stearns implosion earlier this year was probably the first broadly visible warning sign. And secondly, will private money ever come back into the markets and be used as part of this bailout? So far, the cash is sitting on the sidelines. Even those who have deep interests in Wall Street, who've received huge bonuses over the last few years, I haven't seen a dime of private money pledged to dig us out of this mess. It's all up to the taxpayers and the government to do it.
Well, let me take your first question first. I'm sure there'll be some prosecutions. I actually think a sort of parallel interesting question is whether we'll see the kind of congressional investigation that we saw after the stock market crash in 1929, the so-called Pecora Committee investigation, which was really a seminal congressional inquiry that helped lead to many of the reforms in the 1930s of the financial markets. And so far, there's not been any attempt to set up a special committee in Congress or really delve deeply into some of the activities that went on in the financial markets. I've been struck by the lack of such oversight, even in England, where they've had similar problems. The Parliament there has had some pretty exhaustive inquiries that I haven't seen here in the U.S. On the question of private capital coming into the markets, I think, say, for a few, I mean, you saw Buffett put some money into Goldman Sachs a while ago, but at the moment, I think that private money is sitting on the sidelines, in part because the government's absorbing virtually all of the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And in part, I think people are still not sure where the bottom is, and the bottom feeders, so to speak, who might want to come in and pick up bargains are still waiting to see where the bottom is or where things sort of, you know, begin to stabilize. I suspect.
So once again, we're going to nationalize the losses and
right.
then permit people to make profits privately on the way back up.
Well, that's probably true, although I think there are clearly a lot of private losses that have taken place in the market. If you take Citigroup as an example, the stock market capitalization of that company is dropped dramatically. The price of the stock was $40-$50 a share.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it closed at today, but yesterday it was, below $5.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been tremendous losses in the financial companies, the banks and investment banks. And so, obviously some of the employees have been laid off as well. That doesn't mean they're, in the poorhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been losses in the stock market.
Yeah, I read a story in the Times the other day about a family that's trying to squeak by on $800,000 a year, and didn't elicit a lot of sympathy from me.
Yeah.
Jeff, let me ask you to comment on the news here on Friday that Bank of America, which was induced to swallow up Countrywide and Merrill Lynch, is now got its hand out again, saying it needs more bailout cash, and the government's ready to put up $118 billion of liability pickups plus additional cash in. And this just seems to be a bad formula, that we take what was a sound company like B of A, give it bad companies, and then we have to say, well, it's too big to fail, got to keep feeding it cash.
Yeah, I mean, they're actually following in the footsteps of Citigroup. The program that was put together for the Bank of America is pretty much following the same model that the Citigroup, which is that the government injects cash into the company, gets preferred stock in exchange, and then guarantees, in the case of Bank of America, as you said, it's a little over $100 billion. In the case of Citigroup, it's a little over $300 billion.
Mm-hmm.
guarantees, bad assets. And the hope from the government standpoint is to ride this out, and several years from now, things will have turned around. And
Jeff, I've got to stop us there. Thank you very much. We'll talk again. Jeff Girth, publishing now at ProPublica.org. Read his story about Tim Geithner. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The questions we don't like to think about. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Those of us who fly on a regular basis have many uncomfortable questions floating around in our heads as we pretend to ignore the safety lecture. But we suppress them because we know that strapping yourself in a metal tube to go hurtling through the atmosphere at 500 miles an hour surrounded by jet fuel is an inherently insane idea. And we have a suspicion that despite all the options they give you, what would actually happen in the unlikely event of a water landing is that you die. But now we have some answers. Will this plane really glide with both engines out? Yes. Can a plane actually land in the water without breaking apart? Yes. Will a fully loaded plane actually float? Yes. Is it possible to send a text message under pressure? Yes. One woman managed to message her husband, "My plane is crashing." Is there really a reason to have able-bodied people in the exit row? Yes. Can you really evacuate a plane in 90 seconds? Yes. Will the life vests really inflate when you pull firmly on the cord? Yes. Can the wing really hold you when you step on it? Yes. Can a pilot like Chesley B. Sullenberger III ever be replaced by a computer? No. Is there any city more prepared for an emergency than New York? I doubt it. Talk about a winning team. The name of the first ferry captain on the scene was Vincent Lombardi. And I guess the biggest question of all, do prayers get answered? Well, let's see. The plane missed the George Washington Bridge by 900 feet, stayed intact, didn't sink. The boats are right there. Nobody died. What do you think? Now this.
No one knows what women want better than New York Times best-selling author Fern Michaels. Her best-selling Sisterhood series is no exception. These savvy ladies always entertain as they find the most unusual ways to exact sweet revenge. Now you can celebrate the Sisterhood all year long with five new Fern Michaels novels of women at their take-no-prisoners best. Final Justice, Fern Michaels' new Sisterhood novel, is on sale now. No one does payback quite like the Sisterhood.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
"We're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service."
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Robin's Jewelry in Carmel is open every day for your holiday and gift shopping. Robin's Jewelry is one of a kind, unique, and stylish. She uses sterling silver and semi-precious stones and will customize a keepsake right there on the spot. Robin is a native Carmel artist and silversmith. She's located inside the Dowd Craft Studio at Ocean and San Carlos. Robin has a big selection of organic bling. Great jewelry that's affordable. With free engraving and gift wrapping, go to Robin's Jewelry in Carmel.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
The countdown continues. Just a few hours remaining till Bush goes back to clearing brush and Cheney, well, shooting friends in the face, I guess.
I can't take it no more.
Johnny Fogerty can settle down now. The goons are heading through the revolving doors. Some of them will be on K Street, you know, 48 hours later. Ray McGovern has become a regular contributor to this program. We first discovered him in one of Robert Greenwald's films a few years back. He served at the CIA for many years. He's a co-founder of VIPS, that's Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. He's told us the stories of being the briefer for Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s. And, of course, he knew the current Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, when he was at the agency and has been a sharp critic of Obama's choice to hold him over. Ray, welcome back to the show today.
Thank you, Peter B.
And before we dive into your piece about CIA Director Michael Hayden, I wanted to ask Katrina, our producer, tells me that you will not be in Washington for the inauguration. You're escaping to London. Tell us what you're going to do there.
Well, I've been invited by the Oxford Union to give one of the debates there or to participate in one of the debates next Thursday evening, and I'm going to get out of town while the getting is good here. A little bit miffed that for the 14th inauguration in a row, I've not been invited to any inaugural balls, Peter B. Can you imagine?
Well, and we've all seen you on Dancing with the Stars.
So I'm really looking forward to that. It's an excellent opportunity. The topic of the debate is George W. Bush has made this world a lot safer for his presence in office.
Well, the testimony that you can get just from the spin delivered by Bush and Cheney in the last 2 weeks alone will keep you busy.
Well, it'll keep me sick, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And who are your co-combatants there?
Well, Craig Murray, the former UK ambassador to Uzbekistan.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, was sort of a real wuss because he didn't really like the thought of having people boiled alive to give information about so-called terrorists to British intelligence. And also Michael Scheuer, with whom I was on the Lehrer Report.
Right.
So he's going to be on my side this time. And I don't know how I feel about that, B2B.
Now, what about Sir David Manning? He's the guy that I would like to hear now talk honestly about his advice to Tony Blair. He's the guy who delivered the news about the Downing Street memos. He is the one who coined the phrase, they are fixing the intelligence around the policy. And I had a brief encounter with Sir David Manning when he was the ambassador to Washington. He came to a luncheon in San Francisco. I got to sit right across the table from him, and I got absolutely nowhere. At that time, he was singing in key with the sheet music provided. But I think that he might have different perspectives to offer now that Blair's gone and he's no longer on duty.
Well, he certainly could pull a McClellan on us, couldn't he?
Yeah.
I don't think he will. He's not, in my view, not that type of person. Once you get into that system, it's very, very difficult to look up and see the sun. I would love to have a crack at him. What I will have a chance to talk to, the people I will have a chance to talk to are some of the people who were in receipt of the Downing Street memos and had the guts to publish them.
Mm-hmm.
This was an earth-shattering event. I mean, that somebody, number one, would give those memos to the London Times. You know, London Times is no far-left...
Right, it's a Murdoch paper with fully clothed women.
Right. And so, you know, that should have been done. And then that they went ahead with it. I guess when you have documents that you can prove are genuine, you can go ahead with it. But still, that was quite a... And the fact that, of course, it took the... what that story.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Washington Post finally took note of it, when Conyers was beginning to hold that hearing, at which I was privileged to participate, the Washington Post that morning said, well, this is nothing new, you know, we knew all this. Well, if they knew, back then, that the president was fixing the intelligence 8 months before the invasion of Iraq, you know, it would have been kind of nice if the Washington Post would have told us that, you know.
But, well, and now, you know, Bush, I was disappointed in the intelligence, disappointed that we didn't find WMD. He knew. It was very clear by September of 2002, with Iraqi defectors offering very solid information, that the curveball stories, the Chalabi stories, were all concocted to help support the drive to war that was Bush's intention from day one.
Yeah, he was briefed on the 18th of September by George Tenet on the basis of a debriefing from the foreign minister of Iraq, whom Saddam Hussein thought was working for him. He was really had been turned. He was working for us in place.
Mm-hmm.
And he testified there were no weapons of mass destruction. A couple months later, the head of Iraqi intelligence told us the same thing. So if the president was disappointed, he was just disappointed that it didn't work out as per plan, as he put it. See, the plan, as I reconstructed, or as, you know, it seemed to me from the outset, they really did. Peter B., now don't laugh. They really did think it would be a cakewalk.
Oh, yeah.
And so they'd be sitting there in Baghdad, with permanent military bases galore, with a lot of control over that oil, having made that, don't laugh at this, having made that area safer for Israel, okay? And, all those objectives would have been achieved, and then I'm sure they asked themselves, who's going to come around now and say, yeah, but you did it on a bunch of lies? Anybody that would try that would just be dismissed with the back of our hand. We will have succeeded, and it doesn't matter. Chalabi himself says, the lies don't matter anymore. We're in Baghdad. Those were his exact words. So, that's what they thought. And the fact that they could have been so dismissive of everything that experts, even experts not really deeply familiar with the Middle East like me, were telling them, it was hubris to the nth degree.
Mm-hmm. Ray McGovern with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And in a moment, Ray, I want to talk about your post that's up at consortiumnews.com about the outgoing CIA director, Michael Hayden. But this just came in a little while ago. The Justice Department has agreed to drop all charges against Susan Lindauer. She is the New York attorney who was just harassed by the Bush administration, called an unregistered agent because she had defended some individuals, and there were questions about the way she maintained confidentiality and signals that she may have either intentionally or inadvertently communicated to a so-called terrorist who was incarcerated at the time. So this is a moment of justice. And the other one, Ray, is as soon as Bush leaves office, I would love to see the next attorney general lift the gag order on Sybil Edmonds.
Mm-hmm. That would be terrific.
Yeah.
A lot of people would not like that, but I think you and I would really appreciate it because there's a lot of very, very, very interesting and high-level people who would be exposed for what they are.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about Michael Hayden. He is leaving the CIA, and as you point out in your piece, he didn't get a SOP, like an appointment to one of these boards or commissions, like Mike McConnell did. But Hayden appears to be warning Obama that if he authorizes an investigation into things like waterboarding, that nobody in the CIA will ever take a risk again. Tell us a little bit about what you think Hayden might be hiding.
He's involved in all this stuff. I mean, he was the head of NSA when the president asked him, would he please violate the first commandment of NSA, which is thou shalt not eavesdrop on Americans without a warrant. He was the head of NSA when he said, okay, Mr. President, we'll do that. Doesn't matter what the law says. And some of his predecessors, Peter B., said he should have been court-martialed for that because he knew what the law was,
mm-hmm.
and he deliberately violated it. And, of course, he's defended waterboarding and the whole business. So he was in charge of the CIA for the last couple of years. And so he was in charge. charge of these, what the president has called an alternative set of procedures for harsh interrogation, and those things are war crimes. And so, you know, even though Hayden was not there at the creation of these things back in 2002, 2003, he still, by extension, bears some responsibility for allowing it to continue. Their only defense, Peter B., and this is really laughable, they say, well, the White House lawyers said it was okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm expecting a call from the mafia sometime soon with outrage, because I've been comparing Gonzalez and Addington and that bunch to mafia lawyers, and I think that they're going to be really upset about that, because they don't want to be... they're professionals, and these guys are not. These guys were found in the Yellow Pages, I'm sure. But, you know, the defense that the lawyers told me it was all right, that doesn't wash. Torture is always wrong, and I'm just delighted that President-elect Obama and his attorney general coming in have both said, without any qualification, that waterboarding is torture. Torture is a crime, and people who do torture, who authorized it, must be held to account. It's that simple.
Now, we've been talking about this accountability issue, and in fact, we're on standby waiting to hear from Chairman Conyers himself. He dropped this 487-page report, which is a catalog of the misdeeds and power grabs of the Bush administration. And my first choice, Ray, is for a special prosecutor, and I've named David Iglesias as my pick, to fully investigate these issues and bring charges where he finds the grounds for it. But here's a note from Carol in Silver Spring, Maryland, where I once worked atop the CD World building. Mm-hmm. It says, I'm going to wait until Obama is president when he can actually take action. And I prefer he not telegraph his intentions. The police don't call up criminals to let them know where and when they'll be making the arrests, particularly when the criminals are serial mass murderers who are potential flight risks. Well, Carol, you have a point. And the other point is that until the pardon window shuts about noon on Wednesday, it's possible that Bush could obviate all of this by issuing a lengthy list of pardons or some sort of a blanket pardon.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of, Peter B. I think I'll be landing in London on Monday morning on the day of the pardons, the mother of all pardons, I would say, and that will complicate all this. But with respect to what must be done, there is, as you probably know, a raging debate among very good people as to the relative merits of a special or independent prosecutor on the one hand and a commission. To look into things in a more deliberate way, take 2 years doing it, on the other. Now, Scott Horton...
Sure, he's been on our show. Columbia University Law School and also Harper's Magazine, and been big on the Siegelman case.
Yeah, he's one of the smartest guys I know, and he says the commission is the way to go because you need to educate the American people, bring them along so it doesn't seem like a partisan witch hunt. Who am I to argue with Scott Horton? But I feel that there's quite enough evidence out there of the crimes committed, Cheney and Bush both taking responsibility for waterboarding, mm-hmm. which we now know is torture, and which we know is torture is a crime.
They're proud of it.
Yeah, and so there's some momentum there. And here's a guy coming in with over 70% approval rate. You know, don't waste this chance, Mr. Obama. Do what the Constitution requires. Enforce the law. Now.
We're going to take a break and return with Ray McGovern. Read his commentary at consortiumnews.com. And if you'd like to talk with us, lines are open right now. We appreciate your comments. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Fia with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in King City, we have a three-vehicle collision with no injuries on the southbound 101 just north of Oak Avenue. And we're still keeping an eye on the collision on Indian Valley Road just south of Hare Canyon Road. CHP is on the scene there. Taking a look at Monterey, on the one just north of Carpenter Street, we have a traffic collision with an ambulance responding. All vehicles have been moved to the center divider there. Now for weather. It's gorgeous and sunny today. We've got highs in the upper 70s on the coast, and inland we've got highs in the 80s. Tonight expected to be clear with temperatures dropping down into the low 40s to 50s. Well, that's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fantastic Friday, everybody. The Peter B. Collins Show is coming right back.
We all know the economy is experiencing some rough times, but some people seem to thrive even in tougher times than this. Want to own their secrets for yourself? Now you can dissolve away your own barriers and blocks to prosperity and success in life despite negative circumstances. Attend a very special transformational two-day event in beautiful Asilomar. The Monterey Center, your one stop for mind, body, spirit wellness, proudly presents How to Prosper and Flourish with international personal transformation and success leader Ronaldo R. Robles, coming to the Monterey Peninsula in Asilomar for 2 days only on Saturday, January 31st and February 1st, 2009. Seating is limited. Call now to 831-641-9812 to reserve your ticket to success at Inspiring Asilomar Conference Grounds today. Call 831-641-9812. That number again, 641-9812.
God spoke to me today. He said, Reverend Iggy Bob, I want you to go down there to the Quumba, and I want you to tell them that God wants them to mail Reverend Iggy Bob a check.
And just sign it at the bottom. God will tell me how to fill out the rest.
That's sin in your body. That is, son, I can look up inside you like a consecrated colonoscopy. I can see a sin in your body that wants to make love to an inflatable woman. Be making love to a balloon.
Oh, believe me, afterwards, every hair on your body is just pointing straight at her.
Reverend Iggy Bob here with a minute from planetcruise.org.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
You can't touch this.
Criminals in the Bush administration can't touch it.
This is so hard. Make me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What am I to ride?
As we mentioned, Chairman John Conyers of the House Judiciary Committee has published a report, almost 500 pages in detail, of the misdeeds of the Bush administration, the power grabs, torture, eavesdropping, and harassment of American citizens, including Valerie Plame. It is quite a catalog, and we're hoping that the chairman will be able to join us before the end of the show. We have been told he might be able to call in during the next hour, so hopefully we'll get to talk with him then. As you know, we believe firmly in accountability for the Bush administration, and we don't want the incoming Obama administration to just wash it away. Here's Josh in Salinas joining me and Ray McGovern here on the PBC show. Go ahead, Josh.
Hi, Josh.
I just wanted to say, commission my foot. Ollie North was investigated by a commission. He's a newscaster and never spent a day of his life in prison.
Well, I have to say I'm likewise a little commissioned out, and I did share this with Scott Horton, who, Ray, I would agree is smarter than me and maybe both of us. But
together.
I really feel these commissions leave us unsatisfied, and the 9/11 commission is just the most recent example of that. If Lee Hamilton gets appointed to another commission, I'm going to puke.
Well, I would join you. if you look at Scott's article in Harper's this month,
yeah,
it's very carefully reasoned, and it is very carefully structured in terms of how he talks about this commission. He wrote that article, however, before Cheney and Bush both admitted to being responsible for not only eavesdropping but torture.
Yeah.
And so there was some question as to whether Scott himself might say, well, you know, there's enough out there now. And I have to tell you, Peter B., and your audience, that I have extreme extremely mixed feelings about Chairman Conyers. You know, this is his second 500-page book of indictments of the current president.
Right.
And the first one he put out when he was in the minority. When he became in the majority, we all thought that, well, maybe he'd do his job, and that is impeach this president. He openly acknowledges now that he didn't do his job because it was more important that the Democratic Party get the kind of majority that it now has. Well, that doesn't wash with me. With me, the Constitution is the supervening value here. And please tell John Conyers that, next time I'm in his office and get arrested, it'll be for the same reason. He needs to do his job.
Well, Ray, I do agree with you. And I last talked to John Conyers in Washington last March. And we had a healthy exchange, and I explained why I felt impeachment was unavoidable and not something that was optional to the Democratic leadership. And frankly, I found him trying to simply divert attention from the elephant in the room. And it was the very day that Obama had given his speech about race in Philadelphia, and that's what Conyers wanted to talk about. But off the air, he did acknowledge that he's in a pickle and that his desires were not shared by the leadership. And so I really tend to blame Nancy Pelosi much more than I do John Conyers, because I think given his head, he would have pursued a very thorough approach to impeachment.
Well, that, of course, is the explanation. And I happen to know from people who were in the room that the second day that the speaker was speaker, namely Pelosi, she called John Conyers in and said, impeachment is off the table until I say, okay? Now, my question is, does a chairman of a committee, a prestigious chairman who's been around forever, who has great public following and great renown for the things he had already done, does he have to sort of tuck tail and say, yes, yes, Madam Speaker, yes, Madam? I don't think so. I think the chairman of the Judiciary Committee should have the guts to do the right thing or to quit. I mean, what's he got to lose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand. I mean, I'm the first to admit, I don't understand how these politics work, but I do know that Nancy is the fly in the ointment. But gosh, you know, I would have expected more from Conyers. So did Liz Holtzman. So did the people who knew him way back when he did have some guts. So I'm terribly disappointed in him. And, you know, just to hear about another 500-page indictment, well, give me a break. You know, he should have done his job then. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. You're being honest, Ray. I have no problem with that. And we don't protect anybody here on the Peter B. Collins Show. There are a lot of progressive shows that kind of pull punches and don't want to be too critical. And, you know, I don't have any interest in doing that, and they can't fire me. So that's the way I'm going to continue to conduct things. Now, Ray, going forward here, how do you suggest that we pursue these issues with the knowledge that there are pressing problems that we have to confront? But I still feel fundamentally that this is inescapable. It is our duty to fully investigate and hold accountable any wrongdoing that occurred in the last 8 years.
Well, I agree. And, you know, you can really do two things at the same time. You know, not everyone is like Jerry Ford, proverbial, unable to chew gum and do something at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Our Congress is structured so that various committees can carry out their duty independent from one another. Now, Dawn Johnson, the person who's coming in as head of the
Office of Legal Counsel.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's got guts, man. She's really got guts. And, you know, it turns out that most of the people who have guts in the last couple of years happen to be women. Okay,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's great to see women coming in like that. And I think that that there will be a big push, and I hope progressive people will tell Obama, look, don't be beholden to the likes of General Hayden. At that session he had for the press yesterday, it's quite remarkable, Peter B. I've never seen anything quite like it. He said, the president agrees that the, you know, those who authorized the torture shouldn't be, there should be no investigation. And then this, you know, this very familiar rotten apples thing at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, it was just Lindy England and Charlie Grainer going wild in the A block or whatever that was.
Yeah, that's what, here's what Hayden said, quote, I have no right to ask a guy to bet his kid's college education on who's going to win the next election. You can't do this to these people. Oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
You have no right to order anybody to torture people. That's what you have no right doing. And so the apples, just as in Abu Ghraib, are at the very top of the barrel. They're very rotten, and the seepage is fouling the whole bottle.
Have a great debate in London, and we'll talk to you very soon. Ray McGovern.
Thank you, Peter B.
IBEW is the proud sponsor of our progressive coverage of the historic Obama inauguration, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Three-quarters of a million strong is poised to contribute to President Obama's plans for a green economy and our new energy future. Our members are the skilled workforce with the most experience in solar and wind turbine installation, and we have the training programs to supply the skilled labor for our green future. The IBEW is on the front lines, the power lines of the fight for clean energy, from small commercial jobs to massive alternative energy projects, from the Atlantic to the Pacific. The IBEW has a proven track record of professional, high-quality solar and wind installation. Visit our website at IBEW.org. And thanks to every IBEW member who helped bring a new day to Washington. IBEW, helping to transform America's energy.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Passengers expected the worst as U.S. Airways Flight 1549 prepared to ditch in New York's Hudson River. Eric Stevenson decided to leave a message.
I took out a business card and wrote a note just saying to my mom and to my sister how much I love them. And then I shoved it in my pocket because I didn't know if what might happen and if the card would get separated from me.
Others turned their cell phones on so the GPS signal would help searchers locate their bodies. It turned out to be unnecessary. Everyone survived, and now federal investigators are trying to find out what went wrong with the plane. It's still in the water, and divers discovered today that the two engines are missing. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr says they're crucial.
They have to find both of the engines, and they have to look at each one of them to make sure that birds did, in fact, cause the kind of damage that would cause a double shutdown, because a double shutdown is very rare. If they don't see indication of bird strikes, or if they don't see anything consistent with bird strikes, then they're somewhat back to square one figuring out what did cause the problem.
Today, Kitty Higgins of the National Transportation Safety Board says they tried and failed to recover the flight data and cockpit voice recorders.
We know where they are. We just can't get to them because of the problems of the water and the current and the temperatures and the limited dive time we have.
They'll try to haul the plane out of the river tomorrow. The pilot, Sully Sullenberger, is getting praise from all quarters. President Bush and President-elect Obama both called him today. CBS News correspondent John Blackstone reports he was uniquely prepared to handle this emergency.
In 1973, he graduated from the Air Force Academy as best aviator in his class. In his 29 years as a commercial pilot, safety has been Sullenberger's focus. He's also a risk management consultant and does safety research at the University of California, Berkeley.
Late today, the Senate passed a resolution honoring the flight crew and the emergency workers who rescued people from the frigid water. Mr. Obama took time from inaugural preparations today to visit a factory near Cleveland. He was campaigning for Congress to pass a big economic stimulus.
It's not too late to change course, but only if we take dramatic action as soon as possible. The way I see it, the first job of my administration is to put people back to work and get our economy moving again.
House Democrats have a plan that totals $825 billion. The man nominated to be the nation's top law enforcement official seems to have cleared the biggest hurdle.
A committee vote on Eric Holder to be Attorney General has been set for next Wednesday, one day after Barack Obama is sworn in as president, and his confirmation seems pretty safe. At a second day of hearings, former FBI Director Louis Freeh and others strongly endorsed Holder for the job, though the son of a man killed by Puerto Rican separatists in the 1970s emotionally objected, citing Holder's role in their commutation by President Clinton.
CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss. The Dow up 68 points to finish the week at 8281. This is CBS News.
People are feeling it a little more these days. The ows are getting a little more owier, and the uggs are getting just a little uglier. Shoulders and necks are tighter, and when you exercise to work it all out, the soreness can linger. Tiger Balm feels your pain. Stress can make you ache and ugh. Tiger Balm patches and ointments work fast, and they're the powerful way to conquer pain, no matter where it comes from. Go from ow to ah with Tiger Balm. Works where it hurts. Available everywhere.
Thank you for calling Rosetta Stone for your free language learning demo CD-ROM.
Yeah, what's the catch?
Excuse me?
Your ad says I can get a free demo with a free language lesson, so what's the catch?
No catch. We're so sure Rosetta Stone is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language that we'll give you a free demo.
To get your free demo from Rosetta Stone, call now. 1-800-349-5311. 1-800-349-5311. 1-800-349-5311.
Just how big a deal is next week's inauguration? CBS News correspondent Sam Litzinger in Washington looks at it by the numbers.
As I was driving into work, I saw them setting up the portable toilets on the National Mall. Those of you attending the inauguration will be relieved, so to speak. There will be 5,000 of them ready for you on Tuesday. 10,000 buses are expected to bring people into D.C. If you put all of them end-to-end, which could happen in a traffic jam, they'd stretch 85 miles. Now, how many people will be here for the big event? Well, at least 1 million, maybe as many as 4 million. No one's really sure yet. And it's all for one person, the next president, Barack Obama. Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
You might notice something different on your next container of Heinz ketchup. No pickle on the label. For 110 years, the Heinz logo has featured a gherkin because founder H.J. Heinz used pickle pins to attract people to his booth at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. The new label has a tomato. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
Two drivers, two very different stories heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, where we'll talk election protection with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. And we may be joined by House Judiciary Chair John Conyers. Today's program and our special progressive coverage of the historic inauguration of President Barack Obama is sponsored by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They're on the web at IBEW.org. IBEW is ready for our green energy future.
Show me some of them Spanish dancers. Pass me a bottle, Mr. Jones.
As you probably know, every week at this time, we set aside the last hour of our broadcast week to visit with Brad Friedman, the citizen journalist and publisher at BradBlog.com, where his primary focus is election integrity. And he started this, what, about 5-6 years ago, and it's the beast that he can't detach himself from. Hi, Brad. How are you doing today?
Well, you know, I'm doing all right because today, I believe, is the last day, unless, of course, events change on Monday, but today is the last day that we will talk after what all of these years. I think I've been coming on just about every Friday for the last 4 years or so.
That's right.
And when I haven't been able to refer to the guy who sits in the White House as our president.
Mm-hmm.
I've never, unless it was an accident, I don't believe I've ever referred to a President Bush because he was, as far as I'm concerned, never legitimately elected. And it will be a delight to speak with you next Friday and talk about the progress of the President Barack Obama administration, which I'll be happy to spell out proudly. Won't have to put the word president in quotation marks. So this is the end of an era, and I'm glad to be here.
First freely elected president in the new century.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, you know, what we've had to put up with this guy on so many levels, but just the idea that I've never been able to refer to you know, the guy who sits in the White House as our president, whether I like him or not, and I don't have any idea if I'm going to like Obama, we'll see, but at least he's legitimately elected, as far as I can tell, as our president, and I think that'll be a nice change of pace for us all.
Well, and maybe we can recapture some of the luster that the United States had. Not that we were ever perfect, but it used to be when you'd see an article about torture in an American newspaper, it was about something going on in a foreign land. And it used to be when you saw abuses of power and questionable elections, rigged elections, it was all something that we attributed to the Second World or the Third World, but never in our own backyards.
No, and it's kind of an amazing thing, an amazing era. I think we'll look back on this, history will look back on this. I've been writing about this and thinking about this over the last week or two, because it's all, in my mind, it's all going to be about accountability now. And I think that what we are going to see is the floodgates opening up as of, 0200 hours on Tuesday, as we finally hear, we finally see so much of what has really gone on, as bad as it has been. And I share your thinking that it'll be nice to sort of begin restoring, you know, if we can restore American luster and the White House to the Nixon presidency, that will be a step up at this point. But I think we're going to see the floodgates open. I think we're going to see whistleblowers finally coming forward. I think the documents that we're going to now see pouring forth are going to be astounding. And I think as bad as we all know that it now is, I believe that's just the tip of the iceberg, and I somewhat shudder for what may be ahead and what we're going to learn about what has really gone on over these past 8 years, at least from those people who will now be willing to talk, and at least from those documents that haven't been shredded. And I suspect there's a lot of shredding machines going on at this hour and inside the Beltway.
Well, and Brad, one case that you and I have both championed that I would like to see resolved is I want to see the gag order lifted on Sybil Edmonds.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Now, I don't know if that will be the case because, you know, it has been since 2006, since the Democrats have taken over Congress. It's been the Democrats who have held up, her ability to testify about what she knows, what she saw while working as an FBI translator. And she has told me, you know, directly that there are a lot of Democrats who are caught up in this web as well, this, the sharing of our nuclear secrets with on the black market to foreign nations. So, you know, I don't know. That would be certainly a high point if that happened. I'm not holding my breath on that one, unfortunately.
Yeah. And if we do get to talk to Chairman Conyers this hour, then I'm going to ask him about Sybil Edmonds and just remind him that he once made a commitment to permit her to testify before his committee.
Well, and Henry Waxman certainly did directly to her, and he has been the one. It would have been in his committee, I believe, the oversight committee, that would have brought this forward. She has already spoken with folks in the intelligence committees in the Senate, and was Grassley and Leahy both. So said she, you know, her charges need to be taken seriously. And yet, when Leahy had the opportunity, when Democrats took over the House, they didn't give her that opportunity to bring this information out. So either what she's got is really bad and shouldn't be heard for national security sake, or there's a lot of both Democrats and Republicans up on the Hill who are protecting their asses at all costs.
Brad Friedman with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment about election issues or any of the things we're talking about, you're welcome to join the conversation. Our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now, I just pulled up the Brad blog, and what the hell is Bill O'Reilly doing there in Paul Revere? Well, that you photoshopped him into Paul Revere. We give you high marks on the photoshopping, but Bill O'Reilly?
Bill O'Reilly. He announced today on his radio program, and I was hoping to get the audio together in time for you. Maybe I will over a break. He announced that his new role will be as Paul Revere, Peter. He has no idea what this Obama administration is going to bring, and therefore he feels it necessary as a, quote, public service to let us know, because he wants to make sure that Americans aren't harmed by Barack Obama's policy. Isn't that ironical?
I think it's wonderful to have such a great American looking out for me.
Yes, exactly. He's looking out for you and the folks. And what it was funny because he was talking about this, he noted that he was on and on today about the Bush haters and that those people who wish to bring accountability are, quote, hurting the nation. And he said it's time that they move ahead. Now, you'll remember back in 2000, guys like me who didn't care for the fact that George Bush received fewer votes than Al Gore, we were told we had to move on back then.
That's right.
And now we're told we have to move ahead, that we shouldn't bring accountability for what just happened over these past 8 years, even though Bill O'Reilly himself said that when Bush came to office, he thought that Bush should have looked into Bill Clinton's pardon of Mark Rich or whatever that nonsense was.
Right.
He was critical of Bush at the time for not doing so, and yet he says that now we should move ahead, and I guess he won't be critical if Barack Obama decides not to look into the Bush administration, because that would hurt America. It's some pretty twisted and bizarre audio coming out of Westwood One these days, and Bill O'Reilly, whose days are numbered there in any case. But
right.
The man is insane. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
Insane to say that he's going to be the Paul Revere after 8 years of looking the other way, and now he, by the way, seems to be in charge of the Bush legacy rewrite. I mean, he's just going on and on about how Bush kept us safe, and let me say this, because I haven't had the chance to write it, Bush did not keep us safe. Let me further say to all of those, and I've even heard progressives agree, that there haven't been any terrorist attacks on American soil since 9/11. Well, I guess anthrax is delicious. We should have more of that. Has everybody forgotten that there was anthrax attacks not long after 9/11? Has everybody forgotten that, or made a distinction that over 4,000 U.S. troops were killed in Iraq, so that's just fine? But had 4,000 U.S. troops been killed in the United States, that would have been a problem? I mean, what the hell is going on?
Well,
maybe it's just me.
And let me add to that, because yesterday we played excerpts of Dick Cheney's self-serving spin interview with Jim Lehrer that was broadcast on PBS this week.
Yeah.
And I've got the transcript up. Let me just read a couple of items here. Lehrer is saying that if we hadn't tortured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others, do you think there would have been further attacks? No doubt in my mind, says Cheney. And Lehrer follows up, serious attacks of the level of 9/11? Serious attacks, says Cheney. Well, plans, for example, to fly an airliner into the tallest building on the West Coast. Now, you and I know that that whole story has been discredited.
Mm-hmm.
Plans to develop a so-called dirty device to be detonated someplace in the U.S. That's the Padilla case.
Right.
And Padilla was convicted of something that doesn't remotely come close to what John Ashcroft publicly indicted and essentially convicted him of in a news conference from Moscow, bizarrely enough. And then he cites the liquid bomber plot from Heathrow, which we know he intervened personally to expose for political benefit in 2006. And these people appear to have an intent. but they didn't have airline tickets. Half of them didn't have passports. They hadn't perfected a liquid explosive of any kind. And it was Cheney who busted open that plot, again, for political reasons. So he is recycling the same discredited stories in an effort to spin that, oh, we haven't been attacked, and the end justifies the means. Because he claims that, then any power grab, any police state action by Bush, Cheney, and his buddy David Addington, all okay.
Yeah, this is going to be a legacy war, I'm afraid, for a couple of years here, as history writes itself, or in the case of the Bush administration, rewrites itself. And let me add, by the way, to the litany that you just mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, I don't believe that the so-called, what was it, the color-coded terror levels that we
have? Yeah, the Tom Ridge color chart, yeah.
That's
right. We're still orange, aren't you?
If I'm not mistaken, I don't believe there has been a change in that threat level since the 2004, since Election Day of 2004, I don't believe that it has changed once.
That's because nothing rhymes with orange.
There you go.
We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman. We'll go to the phones in the next segment. We're still standing by. It's possible Chairman Conyers will call us this hour, and if so, you'll hear it right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Can choice be saved? On Thursday, January 22nd, please join Planned Parenthood Mar Monti in commemorating the 36th anniversary of the landmark Roe v. Wade decision. Join us for our annual luncheon, Can Obama Save Choice? Attorney Mickey Welsh will address these questions and more. The event will be held at the Hyatt Regency in Monterey on January 22nd from 11:15 to 1:15. Tickets are $25 for students and $35 for general public. For more information and to RSVP, please call Christina at 784-1109, extension 103. That's 784-1109, extension 103.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero & Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Do you love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. We've got a pretty busy evening out there right now. In Monterey on Brooklyn Street at San Juan Road, there is a traffic collision with no injuries. And on the one just north of Carpenter Street, we have a collision with minor injuries. Jumping up to Santa Cruz on Glen Arbor Road at Quail Hollow Road, we have a two-vehicle collision with tow trucks on the way. Taking a look at Hollister-Gilroy, there was a hazard on the southbound 101 just north of Bailey Avenue. And weather tonight expected to be clear with temperatures dropping down into the low 40s to 50s. And Saturday will be clear and sunny with highs in the mid-50s to low 70s. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fantastic evening, everyone, and enjoy the Peter B. Cullen Show.
La 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 la. We continue on the Peter B. Cullen Show. We're talking election integrity issues with Brad Friedman, proprietor of bradblog.com, and we're joined by John in Carmel Valley. Hello, John. You're on the air with Peter B. and Brad.
Would anybody have guessed before Pelosi took over as speaker that Conyers and Waxman would turn out to be such pussycats when they had such reputations for being the exact opposite? I mean, they melted like so many other people did, like snowmen on a hot day. Purely, I think, because she wields such power.
Well, and I agree with you, John, and the miscalculation was that this is what they needed to do to win the White House, control the Senate and the House. And I still believe and will, you know, probably argue this forever, that if the Democrats had allowed impeachment to go forward, not turned it into their major focus or, you know, a witch hunt as the critics would describe it, I think that standing for the Constitution, exposing the intentional wrongdoing of Bush and his appointees, that I think would have served them well, and I think they actually would have won more seats and had that 60-vote majority in the Senate that they desperately need. Brad?
Well, the caller said, who would have thunk it? You're right. You hit exactly on it. She signaled. She showed her hand. Prior to the 06 election, she said impeachment was off the table. It was a bit difficult to believe for many of us at the time. But I guess we have to give her credit for sticking to her word. But not only was impeachment off the table, really, accountability has been off the table. They had all sorts of opportunities all along the way to try to bring accountability. They eventually, voted for contempt charges against a number of Bush officials. And then, what do you know, the DOJ said, oh, we won't enforce those. And they didn't push it. So, you know, I don't know that they're going to push it in the future either. And I just wonder when Democrats are going to wake up and realize that folks like Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Harry Reid have really failed this party. And if it's going to be prior to 2010 or after, but I think those three people just have to go. That ain't change we can believe in.
Yeah. John, go ahead.
Well, I want to remind everybody that her biggest reason that I've heard so far for not having impeachment was she was going to produce a bountiful table of wonderful legislation, and guess what? We didn't get that either. She's a big zero as far as I'm concerned. She should be more than gone by now. But no. They don't think that way, and it's kiss-up time as usual. I just can't see, and I would pay money to be wrong, we're going to have the big changes we're hoping for with this crew still in firm control.
Well, and John, to buttress your point, we've got Charlie Rangel, the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, a powerful Democrat from New York. And I'm sorry, he's been exposed as a guy who was shaking down people who could benefit from legislation before him for contributions to a Charlie Rangel center that he was raising money for. He crossed the line, and it's been exposed, and the Democrats are sitting on their hands. They're trying to avoid this, and it'll be interesting to see how the Republicans will find ethics to be a very important issue now, since they whiffed on it against all their people over the last 8 years. So, we can never really escape the cynicism that visits us from paying attention to politics, John.
I know. It's both incredibly compelling, but at the same time, to follow it, but at the same time, you wonder if your sanity is in order to follow it, because it's the perfect route to a downer.
Yeah. Well, and the other problem we've learned is that we are not RTAs. You know what that means?
No, I don't.
Well, we're going to explain after the break, okay?
Okay, I'll be ready and listening.
And you'll be happy to know that you're not an RTA, John. Brad, stand by. We'll go to our break now and return. And, again, we're on a Conyers watch. If the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee gives us a call, we'll put him on the air and talk with him. It's that simple. You can get a podcast of this or any other portion of the Peter B. Collins Show. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. There's also a tab there called You Can Help, and your support is welcome to help us keep broadcasting. Once again, peterbcollins.com is our website.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Time to paint your house and protect your investment. Custom painting. Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate. Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting Sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, open systems architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And if you just cannot get enough of that sweet stuff I spread around, your humble host will be on Air America late night Friday, 8 to 10 Pacific time, 11 to 1 Eastern, on the stream at airamerica.com. And we continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, and we're talking about election issues and more. We will explain for you in just a second what RTA stands for, but first we've got a crazy lib pinko guy on the line, and it's Steve from Salinas. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good afternoon. I think one of the reasons that Pelosi and Reid have been sort of spineless is I think they could be accused of complicity in some of the crimes. I bet they knew about for sure about the illegal wiretapping and spying.
Well, Dick Cheney went out of his way to include them in his conspiracy and named Pelosi in particular, saying that, I briefed her myself.
Yeah, so if they raised something now, they're admitting they were guilty and they did nothing about it.
Well, Steve, we've talked to some constitutional law experts on that very issue, and the oath of office trumps the security clearances and other secrecy agreements that our elected officials have made.
Oh, I totally agree.
And so
with that,
they do not have the right to turn a blind eye to illegal activities that are being conducted under the color of law.
I've thought that for a long time. But the Democratic Party won't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Brad?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think it's... I have not seen any evidence that... And I know a lot of folks may disagree with me, but I haven't seen any evidence that it is because they are complicit in these various things, that they're afraid that if they bring accountability that, you know, their names will have, you know, will come out and having participated in some fashion. I believe they're just cowardly, just plain and simple cowards.
Perfect.
And, you know, they don't want to do the right thing. If we all went to D.C. and had surrounded the White House or surrounded the Congress for days on end and pushed them so that they had no choice but to bring accountability, perhaps they would have. But as it is, you know, I think it was just easier. They made the raw, brazen political calculation that, hey, we're going to win in 2008 no matter what, as long as we don't upset the apple cart, so everybody keep your heads down, and let's just get through 2008 and get the White House. And I think that's what all of that was about, from the get. And they were right. They got their White House. Now let's see what they do with it.
Two things on that, Brad. One is, I agree with you, the term brazen is not inappropriate here, because they went on to give Bush more money for Iraq than he asked for last year, to extend the funding beyond the beginning of the Obama administration. They'll be back for another $100 billion in short order. But they did a series of efforts which one Democratic strategist, a guy who chaired the platform committee for the convention in Denver, told me. He said, well, we're busy taking issues off the table. And one of the things that occurred was Karl Rove personally taunted Pelosi in some direct mail pieces that he sent to Republicans, saying, you know, he was using Pelosi as a Willie Horton, essentially, saying, if you allow her to get more power, they'll impeach the president. And this was used as a threat to try to rally Republicans, and Pelosi took the bait. So it was in the spring of 2006 that she, quote-unquote, took impeachment off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in politics, those promises are never permanent. And after she won the majority in November of 2006, that's when I think she should have carefully said, well, the people have spoken, and I'm going to let Chairman Conyers follow his head and see where it takes him. And she could have just said, she could have stepped back and said, I am neither opposing nor promoting impeachment. It's a constitutional matter. It's properly before the Judiciary Committee, and let's just see where it goes. But she didn't do that. She continued to, quote-unquote, keep it off the table.
Well, that's right, and I think it was a cold political calculation in 2006 when she said impeachment is off the table because basically she was frightened. And you're right, it was, again, another calculation afterwards to get, you know, to 2008. It is about politics. Now, I don't find that quite as reprehensible as what the Bush administration did, which I find to be evil rather than just lame, lazy, and cowardly. What they did was evil, but I suppose in the end a case could be made that, you know, we have the same result, you know, no matter what reason they did it. We still have folks fighting and dying in wars that they shouldn't be in. Our economy is a disaster, and I think we have, Pelosi, Hoyer, and Reid, those three at the very least to blame for this, and the only question is when will America hold them accountable? Will it be before or after they lose their majority in 2010, if that should happen?
Steve?
Yeah, I think one of the things, they would have, had they spoken up about this illegal wiretapping, they could have been accused of helping the terrorists.
Well, they were anyway.
Yeah,
and they're going to be accused of this nonsense no matter what. I mean, I'm not sure how long it's going to take the Democrats to realize that they can do everything they want to try to keep the right wing nuts out there who own the media from calling them dirty names. But guess what? They're going to call them those names anyway. Period. They haven't figured that out yet. They really think they can avoid criticism if they, just did no sudden movement. It's pathetic.
Steve, thanks for your call. Always appreciate it. Good to have you listening. 888-5 Peter B. If you'd like to join us, 888-573-8372. Well, we learned a lot more in a last-minute report released by the Inspector General at the Justice Department this week regarding Bradley Schlossman. And he's a guy who's popped up on Brad Blog more than once.
Oh, yeah.
He was running the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department, and he's the one who used the phrase RTA to define those he was willing to appoint to a cushy job at Justice and those who would be excluded. RTA stands for Right-Thinking Americans. And Schlossman also referred to people as pinkos, crazy lib lawyers, and people like you and me, Brad, who were not real Americans. And we learned that 63 of 65 positions that he filled at Justice were rock-ribbed conservatives who were able to pass his political litmus tests.
That's right. And we're going to be stuck with these people. It's, you know, it's beyond the fact that they broke the law, that Schlossman broke the law, which the DOJ inspector's report, Inspector General's report found. They broke the, he broke the Civil Service Reform Act, as did others who used politics in order to determine the hiring of these career attorney jobs. And it's really, at least from all of the U.S. attorneys and career staffers and so forth that I've spoken to, has never been done. They came in, they decided they wanted folks from the Federalist Society, no matter how experienced they were or weren't, and they were willing to put them in charge of bringing them in illegally, asking them these questions while hiring them, and then putting them in charge of important cases, important civil rights cases, instead of having the more experienced attorneys handle these cases. And we've got all sorts of email now that did come out in the course of this report, which was done in July of 2008 by the Inspector General's office, but it was not released until just this week. So once again,
Brad, they were having a little trouble with the copy machines.
Yeah, that's what it was. And not only were they having a little trouble with the copy machines and couldn't get this report out, once the report came out, said that they broke the federal law in these hiring practices, and there were some, like you said, some amazing, you know, they would refer to crazy libs as psychopaths and mold spores. It was just amazing what Bradley Schlossman was willing to do and say inside the halls of justice. But they delayed the report. And it turned out that Brad Schlossman also lied to Congress about all of these things in this report. So he broke the law, he lied to Congress, and they delayed the report. Now, to make matters worse, they decided, the U.S. attorney in D.C. decided they are going to bring no prosecution. Now, I'm hoping that changes. We got some good news this week from Eric Holder's testimony. He said that he would review the findings that led them to say, no, we're not going to prosecute. So I'm hoping that he will bring some accountability. He hasn't said he wouldn't. So, you know, we're going to find out what's going to happen. But with this report coming in just days before the new administration coming in, an astounding report showing that laws were broken and that they were lied about to Congress, I can't see how he can't do something about that. And remember, all of this was about voting rights and civil rights, the right to cast your vote, have it counted and counted accurately. And these guys were gaming the system from within inside justice, the very people who are supposed to be monitoring what goes on in our country and keeping this sort of thing from happening. They were making it happen. And that, you know, goes back once again to my tip of the iceberg argument. I think what we're going to see after next Tuesday is going to be astounding. And I'm just hoping that someone like an Eric Holder, even if Obama doesn't want him to, even if Pelosi, Reid, and Hoyer don't want him to, I'm hoping he decides that it's his job to follow the law, not follow the politics of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brad, you also played a major role in breaking a story that was embarrassing to another justice official, Tanner. I think his name is John Tanner. And
yeah.
This was a talk that he gave, and one of your correspondents was there and caught it on tape. And he was making these astounding comments that we really didn't have to worry about disenfranchising African Americans, because what was it, they die at an earlier age or a faster rate than white people do?
Yeah, that photo ID laws were not a problem, that they were for minorities, they were more a problem for elderly people because minorities don't grow elderly, they die first. And that is the direct quote of this John Tanner, who was working with Brad Schlossman in the Civil Rights Division. Tanner was actually in charge of the voting section. And let me put this in perspective. He's in charge of the voting section in the Civil Rights Division, in charge of enforcing the Voting Rights Act. He says minorities don't grow elderly, they die first. We caught that at bradblog.com on video. Alan Breslauer was videotaping Tanner's speech out here. That led to Tanner being pushed out as the head of that department. He's still in the DOJ, by the way, but he's still there. And now we get in this Inspector General's report some email that goes between Bradley Schlossman and John Tanner, in which, and let me see if I can grab this quote directly here, an email where they're about to have a meeting. Schlossman asks him if Tanner wants any coffee. Tanner says, yeah. Schlossman asks him, how do you like your coffee? Tanner writes back, Mary Frances Berry style, black and bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Berry, she's an African-American who was the chairperson of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights from 93 until late 2004. And he calls her, John Tanner, the head of the Civil Rights Division voting unit, calls her black and bitter. And then Schlossman proceeded to take that email and forward it to everyone, at least to all the RTAs, with a note, y'all will appreciate Tanner's response.
Really sensitive, great Americans right there in the Civil Rights Division. Beautiful thing. We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman. We'll find out what input he gave to the Obama transition team. And we'll get a few comments, too, on the legislation that John Conyers has introduced related to voting. That's next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you.
evening, everyone. This is Thea with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now, we have a report of a fire on Bay Farms Road at Salinas Road. Also on Brooklyn Street at San Juan Road, we have a collision with no injuries. And on Highway 68, just west of Skyline Forest Drive, we have a collision involving a deer. Also on Highway 183 at Pajaro Street, there has been a head-on collision, and an ambulance is responding right now. Making our way to Santa Cruz, we have a three-vehicle collision with no injuries on Willowbrook Lane at Soquel Drive. In weather, tonight is going to be clear with lows in the 40s to mid-50s. And for tomorrow, expect it to be sunny with highs in the mid-50s to low 70s. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a great weekend, everybody, and stay with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nikan Robinson. Four on three up the left side, Jamal Boykin, the open floor. Goes in and Viney and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
The Bears are at Stanford tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. to continue their march to March. Hear it here, 540 KRXA, Saturday at 4:30.
If my life without you, days would fly and still I think of you. Days when I couldn't live my life without you, without you.
Show heads into the home stretch. Continue our conversation with Brad from bradblog.com. That's Brad Friedman. And Brad, I haven't heard much about it, but I understand you were allowed to give some input to the Obama campaign's transition team related to the Election Assistance Commission and election process in general. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was glad to talk to them. They reached out to talk about the U.S. elections, the EAC, and what they're doing, you know, when they have these transitions is, at least Obama is doing, is reviewing all of the federal agencies, including the EAC, which has been such a profound disaster from the get-go. From top to bottom, they were instituted by the Help America Vote Act. They were supposed to oversee the voting equipment in the nation and enforce the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, by testing and certifying these machines. They have done an abysmal job. You and I have talked about them more than once over these past few years. And the good news here, for what it's worth, despite the, frankly, if it was up to me, I'd be just as happy if the EAC was abolished, given what a lousy job that they have done in approving voting machines that don't work and aren't accurate and so forth. But I was pleased to see that Spencer Overton was put in charge of the transition review of the EAC. Now, you may remember Spencer Overton. He was the one fellow who had the courage to dissent from the phony Baker-Carter National Election Reform Committee that was put together after the 2004 election. It was put together by right-wingers. It had James Baker on as chair along with Jimmy Carter. It was meant to look like the official commission after the 2000 election, which was Jerry Ford and Jimmy Carter. But this was a private commission. It was completely fake, and essentially all it was meant to do was to push the idea of photo ID restrictions across the nation, which would serve to disenfranchise millions of voters. Well, Spencer Overton was the one guy who was put on that commission who had the courage to say, I dissent, and that this commission is offensive, and I disagree with their findings. And he wrote a book with his own dissent and his own findings. He has been put in charge of the EAC transition review team. So I find that encouraging, and they took the time to speak with me for a few hours last week. We may speak some more next week, but about exactly what is wrong with the EAC, how they have been a dreadful failure, and what may be done in the future to improve the situation. One thing that I mentioned was the there's an advisory commission to the EAC, which has been stacked. I think there's something like 40 folks in it, and it's all voting machine company folks. It's friends of senators. There are no real citizen oversight, citizen election integrity folks, computer scientists. That's missing. Mm-hmm. And so one of the suggestions I made was to put citizens onto that advisory board, or create a citizens advisory board, so folks like Peter B. Collins, who actually knows what's going on with this voting system, or our friends Mark Crispin Miller and so on and so forth, have a voice in what goes on in the EAC, because right now they have no voice. So I'm hoping they take some of my recommendations. I gave them a whole bunch, and I gave them a whole bunch of information about the EAC, which it sounded to me like they weren't aware of. Perhaps at least the fellow that I was speaking to in detail about this, perhaps he hasn't been reading the Brad blog as much as he ought to. So I've referred a lot of information to them, and we'll see what they come out with in their report and how they might change the EAC if they choose not to abolish it altogether. I don't suspect they will. But I'm hopeful, maybe, that they'll bring some change.
Well, and just almost connected to this, a Huffington Post item written by Miriam Miedzian, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, is entitled, How About a Shout-Out for the Election Protectors? And it names everybody but you, Brad.
Yeah, did you notice that?
I did. I read through it twice looking for your name, saying, come on, give it up.
Well, you know, it's okay. I'm glad you mentioned Mark Crispin Miller, Bob Fitrakis, Harvey Wasserman.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mind all that much that I wasn't mentioned, because she talked on and on about the need for a paper trail on these voting machines. You and I know that what we need is a paper ballot. We don't need a trail.
Yep.
And she also thanked a bunch of these folks, Common Cause, Verified Voting, Rush Holt, a lot of these folks who, in my opinion, are otherwise good-meaning folks but got it wrong from top to bottom on election reform, had been fighting for years for paper trails on these touchscreen machines, which are meaningless. And I didn't mind not being mentioned, frankly, in that article.
All right, well, I'm going to give you a shout-out. You get a shout-out just from me.
That's right. I'll take it.
Okay. Now, we didn't get to talk to Chairman Conyers, and maybe we'll catch up with him next week sometime. He has six bills that he's introduced. Three relate to elections. And let's knock out two of them quickly, because at least the titles sound good. The Deceptive Practices and Voter Intimidation Prevention Act prohibits the communication of false election-related information, like Democrats vote on Wednesday, or things like that.
Right.
The Caging Prohibition Act requires election officials to corroborate their caging documents with independent evidence before a voter can be purged from the rolls, and it limits all other challenges that do not come from election officials to those based on personal first-hand knowledge.
For folks who don't know, caging is knocking people off the voting rolls through direct mail lack of direct mail responses and other means that should be illegal.
And the third is election reform. The Voting Opportunity and Technology Enhancement Rights Act will protect and expand voting rights in federal elections, as well as ensure the proper administration of federal elections by requiring early voting, same-day registration, proper allocation of poll workers and machines, and an Election Day federal holiday. Now, that summary sounds good. Does it ban computerized voting machines?
It does not ban computerized voting machines, and worse still, it may do exactly what Rush Holt's bill did in institutionalizing the use of touchscreen voting machines, if I'm reading it correctly. I'm still waiting to get comment back from Conyers' team on this. Hopefully we'll talk about it more in the future, but I'm quite concerned. A lot of good stuff in the bill, but not the idea that we should continue using touchscreen voting. I don't know how that got in there. I'm going to do my best to get it the hell out.
All right. Well, Brad, I want to thank you as usual, and next week we will look forward to talking with you when you can actually refer to the guy in the White House as President of the United States.
Won't that be nice?
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good one.
And for listeners, wherever you happen to be, whenever you happen to be listening, on Tuesday, Inauguration Day, we will bring you special coverage of the inauguration. My colleague Jeff Santos from Boston will be live from Washington starting at 6 a.m. Eastern, and I'll pick up the coverage right after the inauguration ceremonies, and we will be live in Boston and on the Peter B. Collins Network on Tuesday, so I hope you'll join us then. It should be a powerful and inspiring day. And then we'll recognize we got a whole lot of work to do. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds?
IBEW is the proud sponsor of our progressive coverage of the historic inauguration of President Barack Obama. With 750,000 members nationwide, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers leads the way to our green energy future. Our skilled members are excited by the innovation and environmental benefits of the solar and wind generation facilities we've already built. There's one aspect that needs more attention, and that's the grid. Our electrical grid system needs to be updated and upgraded to deliver the green power we want. We learned the hard way during the blackout of 2005 in the East and Midwest, and in California in 2001. Our grid is aging and under strain, so IBEW urges Congress to remember the grid as it builds the plan for our energy future. Find out more at IBEW.org. A message from the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. What happened to U.S. Airways Flight 1549? CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports the work of finding out is well underway.
Investigators hope sometime tomorrow to raise the wreckage from the Hudson, put it on a barge. And if that happens, that will give investigators their first real chance to try to figure out exactly what went wrong.
But both engines are missing. Kitty Higgins of the National Transportation Safety Board briefed reporters late this afternoon.
We've got the New York Police Department working with the Corps of Engineers and using side scan sonar, and they're out there now trying to locate the engine.
They're crucial to learning whether a collision with birds caused the plane to lose power. Everyone survived ditching in the Hudson River. This passenger had a chance to thank pilot Sully Sullenberger.
He was amazingly calm, and I gave him a hug, and I said, "You're my hero."
He says Sullenberger said, "You're welcome." A major bank gets another infusion of cash from the government. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason reports.
It's back to the bailout trough for Bank of America. The Treasury will invest another $20 billion in the nation's largest bank and guarantee $118 billion in assets. The reason for the rescue this time? The bank's shotgun marriage with Merrill Lynch in September was on the rocks, with Merrill bleeding losses. CEO Kenneth Lewis considered abandoning the merger, which could have shaken the financial system.
Also announced today, Chrysler's financing arm will get $1.5 billion in government loans to stimulate car sales with increased lending. The outgoing Bush administration has made one final effort to bring about a ceasefire in Gaza. CBS News reporter Charles Wolfson has details on an agreement between the United States and Israel.
Secretary Rice and Israel's Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni signed the Memorandum of Understanding on Rice's last day at the State Department. The agreement, aimed at stopping the rearming of Hamas inside Gaza, is only part of the solution, Rice said.
One of the elements of trying to help bring into being a durable ceasefire that can actually hold.
Meanwhile, political talks in Cairo continue, aimed at bringing a halt to the fighting between Israel and Hamas, now into its third week. Charles Wolfson, CBS News, the State Department.
George W. Bush, as he prepares to leave office, has an approval rate.